All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Now bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And it's Monday, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And we are going to have the Monday morning movie reviews with the guys, Jim and Eric. We'll review all the new movies. Only one really big one opened up this weekend, but we'll get our thoughts on that and talk box office, which is crazy. So there you go. That's what's coming up on the show. We're going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and some snubs. Yesterday marked the date when Craig Ferguson announced that he was leaving late night TV, and it's left a massive hole in the late night lineup. And it was just one of my favorite shows of all time. So we'll talk a little bit about Craig Ferguson and all that cool stuff. So more coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us now. And also you can check out our podcasts. Every second of every show is podcast. And it's available. You can go to iTunes or any place where you can get your podcasts. Subscribe. It's free. It'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there you go. All right, let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
How are you, man?
I'm feeling great.
Yeah?
Yeah, just came off a great weekend, did a couple of Q&As out there for a couple of great films, had one a little bit earlier tonight, so
yeah,
lots of fun.
Okay, very cool. And you saw, now you did see Endgame.
Yes.
As everybody did.
Yeah.
This weekend.
I thought I was going to see it later in the week. Nah. Just took the time out.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to review it. Jim and Eric and I will review it. And I'll talk to you about it a little bit later on, what you thought about it. But another thing that you did over the weekend is you went to go see, and I was surprised that you'd never seen this movie before. Dario Argento, who's a name that's been brought up on this show several times over the years. He's an Italian horror film giallo director, who is, I guess, most popularly known for the Mother of Tears films, which would be, of course, you know, Suspiria being the best of them all. But he made a thriller in the late 60s called, or early 70s.
Yeah, it was released in 70.
Yeah, okay. Called The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. And they had a 35mm print of it over the weekend over at the Music Box.
Mm-hmm. A beautiful print as well. It looked pristine.
Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know where the restoration was done, but it looked amazing.
Yeah. And that, was there a crowd there?
Not really. Not for the Friday night one. They did it two nights in a row. They did Friday and Saturday.
It was a midnight show.
Yeah, midnight show, which is my favorite time to go see movies, in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And but there was, the people there were having a good time.
Yeah. You gather a bunch of Argento fans in a room, and you're bound to have a good time. I'm surprised you'd never seen it before.
Yeah, I'd been a fan of Argento for a while, and I've seen stuff like The Cat of Nine Tails.
Sure.
I've seen Suspiria multiple times, Deep Red, which is a really fun one, but I had never seen Bird with the Crystal Plumage,
mm-hmm.
and it was great. I had a great time.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. I remember I was little kid when I saw that movie. I was telling you off the air, the lead actor in the movie is an actor named Tony Musante. And he was in a TV series that I loved when I was a kid called Toma. And he was an undercover cop that, you know, that had a lot of, he was best known for his disguises. Like, he would wear masks and stuff. And I loved him on that show. And I loved Toma. And Toma was only on, I think Toma was only on for a couple of seasons. And then it kind of morphed into Beretta. You remember Beretta? You're too young to remember Beretta.
Well, don't, like, I know what it is.
It's Robert Blake.
Yeah.
As Beretta. It kind of, like, that was like a, like, they reworked Toma and turned it into Beretta. And, of course, I love that show, too. But, yeah, I just remember Tony Musante from Toma. I'm probably the only person that even remembers that show. But, yeah. So, but, no, that's Bird with Crystal Plumage is great.
Yeah. The one thing that threw my friends off was the fact that even the Italian actors, their mouth and the audio was constantly out of sync.
Yeah.
And they didn't really understand why. And I explained to them, like, that was how Italian films were made, regardless of what language they were speaking in. Everything was overdubbed later.
Yeah.
So they were just like, how are they capturing this sound? And it's completely, I think, well, they just did ADR later and did it kind of poorly.
Yeah.
But it works.
Oh, no. All of those movies are pretty poorly dubbed. I mean, Suspiria is very poorly dubbed, too, you know.
Right. But even the Italian actors are totally dubbed.
Yeah.
And it's so funny.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But it's a terrific movie.
Yeah. And next week they're doing Dressed to Kill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, is it in 35?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I'm probably going to catch that Saturday midnight.
Sure.
Because I love Dressed to Kill.
Dressed to Kill is a great movie. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Hopefully it's like the unrated cut, though.
Yeah.
Because that's the only one worth seeing, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, De Palma, you know, you know, he's the man. So, all right. You know, in the newsroom, it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
How you doing, buddy?
Very well.
How was your weekend?
It was okay, despite Saturday's snow.
Yeah.
I did not go outside all day. It's just hibernated, and then spent most of it outdoors yesterday, even though it was a little chilly. But, yeah, it was nice when the sun was out, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we were out, my parents and I were out in that nonsense on Saturday.
Were they?
We went to go see Endgame. We went to go see the Avengers movie. And the weather, I'll tell you something, man, the weather did not keep those people away from that movie theater.
Really?
Yeah.
That was intense snowfall in the loop.
Ridiculous.
Yeah,
ridiculous, ridiculous, man.
Like the size of cotton balls, the snowflakes.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. It was. Come on. Friend of mine put really like a sobering post on Facebook too, which I hadn't really done the math yet, but he said, you know, if that was our last snowfall of the season, we're looking at about 22 weekends until winter. So enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, obviously, Chicago is known for its weird weather. You know what I mean? But I got to say that this winter was just, I mean, a little much. You know, I've lived here my whole life, and I know how bad it gets during the winter, and I know about the snow and the cold, but this was a little much, really. I mean,
I think everybody feels that way.
Oh, my God. The amount of snow that we got and that whole polar vortex thing that happened in February. And anyway.
Yeah.
The White Sox get snowed out.
I know.
And then, you know, it was crazy. Crazy. I was talking about the Cubs game from last night. 6 hours. Almost 6 hours long, the Cub game.
Almost as long as I slept.
Yeah.
Really?
It was a 3:10 first pitch, 3:10. The game ended at almost 9 p.m.
I had no idea. Because I was going, I went to bed at 3 p.m. I was thinking around 1:30 that the game was going to be on, and then I realized it was like closer to 3 or a little after 3, so I didn't bother watching it. But,
yeah. Well, you slept through the whole thing.
I did. I woke up at 9 p.m. It was ending.
It was just ending. Your whole sleep cycle, your whole sleep cycle covered the entire game. Yeah, and I was listening to the game, and Pat and Ron were just getting goofy. You know what I mean? When you're in the booth for almost 6 hours, you got to.
That's a lot of time to fill too, right?
I mean, I know that Pat takes the fifth inning off. I understand that, but that's still that's a long stretch, man. So they won, though, you know.
Yeah.
They're off tonight. And then interleague play. I hate interleague play. You disagree, Tom?
I don't mind it.
I just think it's
fun.
The only time an American League team should play a National League team is in the World Series. I know I sound like an old man, like an old fart, but I don't like interleague play, and I especially don't like it when the Cubs play the Sox. It makes me nuts.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not a big fan of the Crosstown Classic?
No.
I got the one thing that does get me is like the different rules based on whether you're in the American League part. I'm just like, at what point are we just going to adopt these as just across the board?
So they're playing in Seattle, which means Schwarber's going to play both games.
Yeah. there it is.
That's for sure. So that that's a given right there. But yeah. It was a frustrating game, though. I was telling you off the air that they had scoring chances in the 12th, the 13th, and the 14th. They could have ended that game. And it didn't. It was what? So I don't
know. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love baseball. So.
Yeah.
But
everybody gets their chance to come back. Everybody, you know, it's not just like you can't run the clock.
No.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting game, though, man. That was a long haul, man. And I know a lot of people, you know, like, oh, baseball's too long. It's boring. It's not boring. It can be long, but it's not boring. I mean, it was an under 6 hours game, but I enjoyed it.
Interesting stuff. I'm guessing your dad was screaming.
I would imagine so. No, you know what? He was working at the Jewels. My dad. He was working at the Jewels. So he didn't miss the whole game because I think he got home and he was still able to watch 3 hours of it. That's what I think. So, all right. Well, listen, we're going to break here for a commercial here. When we come back, Eric and Jim are going to be here, and it's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5 a.m. It's Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're also going to talk about snubs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, it is Monday. That means the Monday Morning Movie Reviews shall commence. Jim Laskowski, Eric Childress join me every Monday to review the new movies, and then Eric sticks around and we talk about the box office. Lots of box office to talk about here. It was a pretty busy weekend in terms of box office, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But let's welcome the guys here to the show. Here's Eric. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Jim. Jim, welcome.
Thank you again, Nick.
All right. You guys, Eric, you guys made some announcements with the Chicago Critics Film Festival this week.
Yes, we did.
All right. Let's tell everybody all the latest. What's going on?
Well, the entire schedule and lineup is up. If you go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com, you can see the entire schedule and everything that we have announced for this year's festival taking place May 17th to the 23rd. We have made some previous announcements here on the show as well, and so people know that we are doing a 40th anniversary screening of Alien as part of our gift back to the audience for coming and seeing all these brand new films. We give them a classic film. What we did not announce prior is that we're going to have Tom Skerritt there.
Yeah.
Tom Skerritt is going to be there Saturday night, May 18th, 6 o'clock p.m. at the Music Box to present and do a Q&A after a 35mm presentation of Alien.
That's amazing. That really is awesome. That really is awesome.
Yeah, this. I mean, we were trying to make a big event out of this when we first conceived it, and Tom just got back to us right away and said, "I'm clearing the schedule."
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah, it's really pretty terrific.
Yeah, that's pretty great. That's pretty great. All right. So what else did you guys announce besides the fact that Tom Skerritt's going to be there?
Yeah, well, we're going to have special guests there every night. The Nightingale on Sunday night, the night of the Game of Thrones finale. We're going to be showing Jennifer Kent's new film, The Nightingale. But we're going to have the star of The Nightingale there, Aisling Franciosi, who actually is on a couple episodes of Game of Thrones and actually plays a pretty important part. So you could sit at home and watch the finale, or you could come see a really great movie and see someone who's in your favorite television show that evening.
All right.
I recommend do that, because you could always DVR Game of Thrones and watch it later that night.
Yeah, okay.
Like all of us are going to be doing at the festival.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I'm fine.
Yeah, you're good. No, you're good. You're good. You and like four other people, you're fine.
Right.
But so yeah, so that's going to be Sunday night.
I don't know if that that's not the finale, because I will be concerned, because if that's the finale of Barry.
I'm a little behind on Barry right now. I hear it's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So the HBO screwed up like the second week and threw all the times off, so it didn't tape it.
Mm.
So I haven't gone back to watch that episode that I never had taped. So
okay,
yeah, but it might be the finale. But you could just DVR.
No,
that
I haven't watched last night's episode. I'm like,
okay,
I'm gonna watch it when I get home in the morning.
There you go.
That's what I do Monday morning. So
okay.
Yeah.
One event that I'm really excited about, because it actually it's kind of like a 3-year journey to actually make this happen. On Tuesday night, May 21st, we're showing a movie that we talked about from South by Southwest called Pink Wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by Tom Cullen from the movie Weekend, and the stars of the movie are Tatiana Maslany and Jay Duplass. We're going to have all three of them there.
That's awesome.
Tuesday night. Yes, Orphan Black is coming to town.
That's awesome.
And we played a movie on 2016 called The Other Half with Tatiana Maslany and Tom Cullen. They were the stars of the movie, and we were so trying to get them to come, and the schedules didn't quite work out because they were off filming other things, and their schedules didn't allow it. Well, 3 years later, we got to make it happen, and so they're going to be there Tuesday night to do a whole Q&A after the film. I'm really excited about that.
That's very, very cool. All right.
Yep.
And you got some other special guests. Jim Gaffigan is going to be there?
Jim Gaffigan is going to be there closing night. This movie, Light from Light, this kind of ghost story film that really kind of blew us all away. We're ending the festival again with another ghost story. This one certainly very, Jim Gaffigan is, the co-star, one of the stars of the film, but this is not a comedy. Jim Gaffigan is a terrific comedian. He's in a couple movies that we're showing at the festival, but this one that we're closing with, we're just so happy that it's a part of the festival, and Gaffigan and the director, Paul Harrell, will be there closing night.
Very
so
cool.
Chicago, Elgin native Jim Gaffigan is going to be there closing night.
Yeah. All right. That's great, man.
Yeah.
That's really great. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Opening night is going to be just kind of an awesome night. We're opening another film that we saw at South by Southwest called St. Francis. It's an entirely local production. I was told that everyone except like two people on the entire production are actually from Chicago or the surrounding areas. So that's going to be kind of a really special event for them, and it's a really, really sweet story. The star and the screenwriter, Kelly O'Sullivan, and the director, Alex Thompson, are going to be there, as well as I assume probably the entire production is going to show up for that opening night. Then we're also showing A Greener Grass, which is an extension of a short film that we played at the festival several years ago, and the stars of that film, Jocelyn DeBoer, this is going to be like her fourth time at the festival, actually. She was there for two shorts before, and she was also in Dead Snow 2. She was here for that. So this is like her fourth time at the festival. Her and Don Luby, her partner in the film, are going to be there. And then at midnight, Nick, there's a movie called The Perfection with Allison Williams.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're going to lose your mind this movie.
Is that right?
Oh, this we're so happy to get this movie, and we're going to be playing it. We're playing it twice, but we're going to play it midnight on Friday, May 17th, and the entire opening night is dedicated to women, because every single film stars women across the board. So we're really kind of proud for opening night, and that's going to be a real special one.
Okay. All right. So that's The Perfection, which is at midnight on that. Okay. And the full schedule and all the tickets are available, correct, now?
Yeah, individual tickets for all the films are available right now. Passes are still available for just $150. You can see be part of the entire festival. You have carte blanche to basically come in and out as you please. So I highly recommend that, because you're not going to find a better deal anywhere. But like I said, we've only kind of scratched the surface of some of the guests. We have 22 guests coming to the festival this year, including Colin's short programs and other guests throughout the week. Come to look at the lineup, because it's going to be pretty amazing. And we're actually going to be having Saturday night after Alien, we're actually going to be having the Chicago premiere of Danny Boyle's new film Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be part of it. So we're going to scare the crap out of everyone with Alien, and then we're going to lighten the mood a little bit with Yesterday.
Well, I mean, the trailer for Yesterday, I don't know. I think it looks great. I think the concept is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one guy who knows who the Beatles are.
Right.
And then he becomes, like, famous because he's playing Beatles songs.
Exactly.
I think the concept is fantastic.
Yeah.
So... all right. Well, it sounds great, man. Congratulations on all the really cool guests and everything.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm sure everybody's going to ask Tom Skerritt about Top Gun. I know that'll be it.
Or Poltergeist 3, if somewhere in Chicago.
Hey, I happen to like Poltergeist 3.
Yeah, you're kidding me.
No, I do. I think Poltergeist 3 is a good
movie.
I
like it.
Two of you like Poltergeist 3?
Yeah.
I'm on the wrong show. Okay.
I actually like it the most of any Poltergeist movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because I don't like the first one very much. The second one's unwatchable.
I wouldn't go that far.
Jim, come bring it back a little bit.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, my God. Okay.
All right, well, congratulations on all that. Everybody can go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com is at the Music Box Theater starting on May 17th through that week. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, we got a couple of movies that we're going to review here. So that's Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski. We'll take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll jump right into the new movies to review right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. on a Monday morning here. We're going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and some of their snubs. Yesterday was the day that Craig Ferguson announced that he was leaving his late-night talk show, and so we're going to go back and look at why that was, like, one of the greatest TV shows of all time, and why Craig Ferguson was, like, one of the best hosts in the history of the medium. We'll remember that, too. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday and it's a jokey time, but right now, we've got movies to review. Eric Childress, Jim Laskowski join me every Monday morning to review the new movies. Let's bring him back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you again.
All right, Eric, tell us about Family.
Okay, this is a film that premiered at the South by Southwest Film Festival in 2018. I think we might have talked about it a little bit then. It stars Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black as a female executive who is not exactly the most pleasant person to be around. She really just kind of hates everyone. She's completely selfish and never minces words in company of anyone. She can just be as offensive and politically incorrect as possible to get her point across. But her family, though she tries to avoid them, are coming to her in a bit of desperation. It seems that her in-laws' mother is dying. So as they go, as they want to go visit her, they ask her if she will take care or watch their 11-year-old daughter. And you know, she's reluctant to do this. She's not exactly happy with the task of doing this, and hardly makes the best den mother around. But the girl kind of has her own issues. She's very withdrawn. Her parents are very demanding. At one point, they take her to a karate class instead of ballet class that is run by Brian Tyree Henry, who has some wonderful stuff in the movie. But the 11-year-old girl, throughout the course of the film, ends up with people that have a interest in juggalos. Yes, this is a movie where juggalos actually become a very big plot point throughout the film. And what you have here, familiar kind of story. It's almost kind of Uncle Buck in a way, just with the female. This movie is actually really quite funny at times. The stuff that Taylor Schilling, her dialogue when she's the mean version of herself, which is a good portion of the film, is actually quite hilarious. Her exchanges, Kate McKinnon plays her neighbor in the film. Their exchanges are really funny. Like I said, Brian Tyree Henry, only has a few scenes in the movie, but his reaction to the whole juggalo scene is it's a priceless moment in and of itself. This is not a movie that you haven't seen before in some respect. It's just a little kind of ruder than some of those films that kind of put a touchy-feely face on things. It's R-rated for a reason, but I had a really good time with it, and I laughed quite a bit, so I'm recommending it.
Okay. You had me at Kate McKinnon, so that's a great cast. I mean, it really is. Okay, and it's playing at three theaters. It's playing at the River East. It's playing in Rosemont and another theater, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out right now, and that's called Family. Okay. All right. Jim, tell us about Under the Silver Lake.
All right. Well, after delays and festival premieres and kind of a divisive response from those who did get to see it, we finally get the latest film here from David Robert Mitchell. And if you don't know the name, well, I think you'll recognize the last film he gave us, which is the incredible horror film It Follows, which is why this follow-up was a priority for me. And we are introduced to a slacker named Sam, played by Andrew Garfield, who is kind of this unemployed Lebowski type living in the hipster Silver Lake neighborhood of Los Angeles. He doesn't really do a whole lot besides hook up and smoke pot and leisurely stare at his neighbors, and of course has trouble paying rent, among other things. But he's also following the news of a famous local millionaire gone missing and just kind of going through the motions. Then one night he has a rather interesting brief encounter with another neighbor, Sarah, played by Riley Keough, and they seem to hit it off quite well. But the very next day, Sarah has disappeared without a trace, having moved out of her apartment overnight, disconnecting all contact, and just seemingly dropped off the face of the earth. No social media presence at all, just gone. So Sam makes it this mission to discover where she is and why she went away, turning this neo-noir into kind of this conspiracy mystery of sorts. There are other oddities throughout that are introduced, including Topher Grace as Sam's drinking buddy, an elderly songwriter who claims that he's responsible for all the hidden messages in pop music. There's a comic nerd and conspiracy theorist, as well as some mysterious creature that happens at the face of an owl or something. this is a messy movie, and I'm the first to admit that, but it's also a puzzle. and I can understand people finding this a very frustrating puzzle, whereas I found it very intriguing. It's kind of Mitchell's take on the neo-noir, like I said, but he's also kind of poking fun of certain tropes within the genre in a way. It's like this is kind of a weirder version of something like Inherent Vice, but I was also reminded of like the work of Richard Kelly, and almost to the point where I was like, well, what if Richard Kelly directed Body Double? This is kind of what it would be like. So I do think it's, you know, a flawed film, but it's kind of about the male gaze and how gross and creepy it can be in this context, especially since Sam is kind of drawn to certain women in a way that is uncomfortable at times, I think. And a lot of random character actors show up. There's this unusual dance number involving acid and REM. There's just a lot of detours and dark comedy, and I was constantly unsure about where this film was going, but it raised a lot of interesting questions, like, are all conspiracy theories kind of stupid in a way? Are we overanalyzing pop culture to fill some kind of void in our lives? I think it's interesting and worth seeing. It's self-indulgent at times, but I think in a good way. So I'm kind of highly recommending this movie, and it's out on VOD, so people should check it out.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Good.
I thought it was great, and it is wholly original. And it's really, I've been sort of ensconced in Hitchcock lately because of my film club. I just showed The Man Who Knew Too Much. We're showing North by Northwest next Tuesday, and this reminded me of it was like watching Hitchcock after smoking, four bong hits. It's kind of like the way it plays, and it plays that way throughout the entire time. I thought Garfield was great. I was intrigued by the whole thing. I thought it was very funny. I know it's very long. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, but it didn't feel long to me.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued by it. It's a hard film to describe.
For sure.
And it's also kind of, you could understand why somebody would hate this movie. There's no question about it. While I was watching it, I was like, okay, I can understand. That Eric, this played at some festivals, right? And
It's like Cannes last year, and it just it's one of the more baffling things that A24 has done, because they specialize in these, yeah, in all different types of independent cinema, and it just seems odd that they decided that this one was too strange for audiences. I don't quite understand that. I mean, yeah. I know that it's divisive, but they're treating it like it was Southland Tales. I haven't seen the movie yet, but yeah, I know a lot of people that really like it.
Yeah.
It seems odd.
It's an odd movie. It is a strange film, and it's not for everybody. I would be the first to say that, but I was intrigued and entertained by every second of it, and I really loved it. And I loved all the cast. I loved everybody in the cast. I followed along. Really, I was intrigued by everything, and led by a terrific performance by Garfield. He's really, really great. I mean, he's a terrific actor, Andrew Garfield. He's just great, and he's great in everything, and he's really terrific in this. And it's just a very strange, weird movie. But I was on board 100%. So I really thought it was terrific. That's Under the Silver Lake. Again, it's a strange one, but I think worth seeing. So, all right, guys, hang on, okay?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All right, Erica and Jim are going to hang on. There was this little, small, low-budget independent movie that we have to talk about next that came out over the weekend and did okay at the box office. And we'll talk about that after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. Because it's a jokey time, we're going to talk about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, notable snubs, and lots more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Eric and Jim are here. We're reviewing the new movies. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, tell us about this little movie called Avengers Endgame.
All right. Well, this is it. This is the one, the film that everyone in the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been waiting for. Everything has been building up to this. And I'm not going to reveal too much about the plot, because I think actually one of the great things about what they've done with this film is actually reveal as little as possible in the marketing. But if you're people who, you know, are fans and follow this and heard us review Avengers Infinity War last year, you know, people know that things did not turn out great for a lot of our heroes at the end of that film. It ended on a cliffhanger kind of unlike we've ever seen before, and this movie it picks up some days after the events of the last film, as all the remaining heroes gather together to try to figure out how to bring everyone back and defeat the terror that is Thanos. And that's kind of all I want to reveal about the plot. Like I said, there are things in this movie that the plot, even itself, seems to be full of surprises. Let's say off the bat that it borrows heavily from a film that, or film series at least, that, you know, I won't mince words, is one of my favorite film series of all time, and is even frequently referenced throughout the film, because, you know, maybe I won't reveal a little bit, but the heroes figure out a way to actually, shall we say, take a tour through the other films that we have been witness to over these past 11 years. They have to regather the Infinity Stones that you know, Thanos had achieved finally in the last movie, and they have to regather them, and that causes them to go back into events from previous films in order to do that. And I walked into this movie, as I've been telling people, because I was not a big fan of Infinity War. I thought that the film was too overstuffed. It was bringing all of these heroes and characters together that we've been getting standalone movies for and sequels for the last 11 years, and it was felt overstuffed to me. Some of the stakes, although very important to them, didn't feel as real to me. I wasn't a big fan of the final battles in the film. I watched it again in preparation for this, and I appreciated certain aspects of it a little bit more, but still kind of felt the same. So I walked into this one, as I've been telling people, more curious than excited. By the time it was all over, I was ridiculously excited and wanting to tell everyone I possibly could to see this movie, because this film, and what was the result of the last 11 years, is almost, you know, it's a little tiny miracle that, you know, we've seen trilogies, we've seen film series over the years, we've seen film series that try to go back on themselves and try to, you know, to re-piece themselves together. This is the culmination of a project that seems like they had a Doc Brown timeline on their, you know, their sandwich board, basically, and, or, you know, their murder board, as it's called in politics, and figuring out exactly where all these characters are going to intersect, how we're going to pay off certain details about their personal lives. And there are things in Endgame that get paid off that you, in a million years, you would never have had me guess were going to get paid off. Just the things that I didn't think they were past, they were not going to bring up really again, and they get sincere closure in this movie, particularly in results to parental units throughout the film. Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans doing spectacular work in this film. I think Karen Gillan is kind of the unsung hero of this movie. Nebula is a big part of this film, and I think she may arguably give the best performance in the film. It's really nice that Paul Rudd's Ant-Man is not just a amped up for comic relief, but is a really kind of a crucial part of, you know, why, you know, how they're going to solve this problem. Like I said, there are surprises abound in this story. There's a cameo machine, unlike, you know, since Robert Altman's The Player, practically, in this film. It's exciting. It's emotional. People have been talking about, you know, when am I going to go pee? It's 3 hours long, as if we haven't been seeing, you know, 2.5 hour blockbusters over the last 10 years. It's kind of a ridiculous statement. But for those who are worried, this is one of the fastest moving 3 hour films I've ever sat through. It didn't feel like it lagged at any point. I was completely invested in the entire story. And as the culmination of a universe that has had highs, had some lows, had some rocky patches in between, this is, you know, I think it's beyond fan service. I think it's almost cynical and wrong to say this movie is nothing but fan service, because, like you said, it pays off things. It's true to its characters. It's true to its story. And it has completed an arc that has taken 11 years to build, and I think that they've done a masterful job with it.
Okay. All right. Jim, what did you think?
Well, let's just say I really like this movie quite a bit. I'm not in the love category necessarily, but, I mean, it goes to, you know, it's one of those experiences where you have to go to your theater and experience this movie, especially if you do have a lot of emotional investment in this franchise, which, you know, I'm not the biggest comic book movie guy. And, you know, there have, as Eric said, there have definitely been some ups and downs throughout the entire Marvel universe. And there are certainly ones that I did enjoy immensely, including the first Avengers movie and last year's Into the Spider-Verse. And I didn't mind Infinity War, though, you know, yeah, it does have a lot of crazy CGI battle sequences that sometimes I find numbing more than exciting. But here, you know, I really love the first hour of this movie. I mean, it's more about the character moments and the humor and the sense of camaraderie. And, you know, that experience in of itself for me was very satisfying. I was a little worried at the outset because I think they could have reintroduced a particular character's shock, I guess you could say, in a way that maybe would have had more dramatic weight to it. It was just an interesting, unexpected way to open a film. But once Ant-Man comes onto the scene, it becomes a joy, and it's like a comic book version of one of my favorite HBO shows, The Leftovers, which, you know, I did have a lot of emotional investment in. But, you know, and also we sort of danced around a little bit of the movie that Eric is referencing, but I will say that it gets much better treatment here than it did in Happy Death Day to You earlier this year. But, you know, what kind of let me down just a little bit, but not a lot, is just it kind of culminates into a showdown that, you know, to me was not unlike the one in Infinity War. It was just, okay, I kind of expected, I kind of knew where this was going to go, but this is really well executed all around. I mean, it does pay off, you know, every little thing from the franchise in a very satisfying way. I mean, I would come down on the side of being a little nitpicky about certain details that I can't really, you know, reveal just because it's spoiler territory. And, you know, at the same time, I can't deny the fact that I had a great time. It moves by at a lightning speed. So yes, this doesn't feel like 3 hours, so people shouldn't worry about those things. I mean, it's worth the investment, and if you've been invested this whole entire time, you are going to have a great time. And it's a very good example of all the strong elements coming together. It's a love letter to the fans. It's worth commending for not being a letdown, because, you know, it seemed like it could go that route, but it doesn't quite reach the heights of something like Spider-Man 2 or Into the Spider-Verse for me personally, but it's absolutely well worth seeing. I'm highly recommending it, and you've probably all have seen it twice already.
All right, well, you guys hang out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, I'll tell you what I thought of it when we come back. We'll take a little break. I'll tell you what I thought of Avengers Endgame, and then we're going to talk about the box office numbers, which were huge, and we'll talk about that with Eric. That's all coming up. So we'll take a break. We'll come back right after this on 720 WGN. Back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we got lots more to talk about. We're going to talk about Rock and Roll Hall of Fame snubs. And we are also going to talk about, we're going to look back at the great Craig Ferguson, the Late Late Show. He announced yesterday on this date, he announced when he would be leaving the show. And late night was never the same after that. So we're going to talk about that. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we are in the middle of the movie reviews. Before the break, we had Eric and Jim give their thoughts on Avengers Endgame. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So I thought it was pretty great. I'm not, you know, like the biggest comic book guy. I'm not... You know, I did not jump into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, head first, you know, into the deep end or anything like that. I like the movies. There are some that I like more than others, and so, you know, some that I love, some that I don't like very much. But overall, it's been an entertaining, you know, 11 years following these characters. I do think that they do an incredible job wrapping everything up. And like you guys both said, it flew by. It didn't feel like 3 hours at all. And it was fun to watch this movie. We saw it, my folks and I saw it in the IMAX and the 3D. And the place was complete. Obviously, to say it wasn't packed, I mean, the place was completely packed. There wasn't an empty seat in the place. And everybody was very enthusiastic. It was really, I got to say, it was really a lot of fun to watch it with such an excited audience. I mean, there was lots of applause. You know, at certain points in the movie, there were people just, you know, they would just break out in applause and whooping and all that kind of stuff. Lots of cheering. So in that regard, it was really a lot of fun to be in a room full of people who were clearly big fans of these movies and were having a fantastic time and were feeling really great. And it was fun. And it was that you know, that's really a lot. That's really part of the reason why people go to these movies is to have that kind of. Experience. It's a really well made movie. Again, like we said, it's paced very well. The acting is, you know, the acting has always been a pretty strong part of these movies, especially when you got guys like you know, Robert Downey Jr. I mean, the cast is just great, and they're all really they all get a chance to shine. I was really, really pleased at how much Renner got to do in this movie, because you know, like Hawkeye's always been kind of like a character who's like. Nobody really. Everybody makes fun of him. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And he really rocks in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he's terrific in it. I mean, it's a lot of it centers around him. You know, there's a lot of Renner in this movie. And if you happen to be a Jeremy Renner fan, and I happen to be a massive Jeremy Renner fan, I also love the fact that like everybody from the Hurt Locker's in this movie. I mean, everybody. It's like almost the entire cast of Hurt Locker is in this movie.
Yeah.
And I like that. A lot of it was very exciting. The special effects are great. I mean, the big battle sequences at the end are spectacular. They're beautifully done, really well paced. And like I said, the audience went nuts during the last like 15, 20 minutes of the movie. The place was up for grabs.
Yeah.
And deservedly so. It's really and there's a huge emotional payoff at the end of this movie, a big one. And lots of surprises and, you know, lots of people popping up and characters popping up and. You know, an actress and actresses from the past movies actually showing up, even with no dialogue. You know what I mean? Like there's some big names in this movie that don't speak, and so it all pays off. I also found, you know, like a lot of these great the Marvel movies are the best ones are the ones that also have that some big laughs. And I gotta say, you know, the first two Thor movies are not good. I don't like either of the first two Thor movies, but he's like my favorite character in this movie. What they did to Thor in this movie, yeah. I was laughing my head every time he showed up. It was hilarious. And one of my favorite Facebook quotes that was on my news feed was just like some regular guy says that, he says, "I would like to thank Avengers Endgame because now I can finally cosplay Thor."
And well, the thing that I like so much about that particular part of the storyline is that there is no redemption in a way.
It's like,
we're going to play this ball for laughs, and then he's going to be back to Thor the next scene.
Exactly. That's one of the things I love. I thought for sure we were going to see some sort of like training montage or something,
and it never
happens. Yeah, and I was like, "That's fake. It doesn't even trim his beard. It's just it's hilarious." And you know, I mean, the core of this whole thing is Robert Downey Jr. You know, I mean, he really is, and they know that. You know what I mean? The people that made these movies know that he's the reason why, you know, the success of these movies has really happened, that he's really the core.
Started with him.
It did, absolutely. You know? And they do a wonderful job acknowledging that in the movie. I mean, you know, obviously we could give this movie any kind of review. Everybody, you know, went to see it.
Right.
Everybody's going to still see it. So it's like, it's one of those movies that is critic proof.
Sure.
But I really liked it. I had a great time. Mm-hmm. And it flew by, and there was a good emotional payoff at the end. The audience that I saw it with went nuts. I mean, they truly had a fantastic time. And it was, you know, I saw it in the biggest screen possible in 3D, and that was a blast. And it was everything that a big budget adventure movie should be, and more. And it is a huge payoff. It's a great way to end the series. It really is. And I think, I mean, you know, everybody I know, you know, loved it. I think it's much better. I liked Infinity War, but I think this is a better film than Infinity War, a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, big laughs and big excitement and surprises and cameos, and it's just everything that you could want. You know, it's a buildup of 11 years, and it pays off. So I really liked it a lot, and I think the fans already have spoken. You know, this is just great. It's a great way to end the series, and I really had a great time with it. So, all right, what do we got next week?
Long shot. Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen opens.
Right, and then that movie where Dennis Quaid is terrorizing people.
Yeah, Reverse Cold Creek Manor, as I call it.
Yeah, what's really funny is that he's got that cute dog movie coming out in a couple, talking dog movie coming out in a couple of weeks too.
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta, because I love Dennis Quaid, and I'm curious about this Intruder movie just because it's Dennis Quaid. If it was somebody else, I probably wouldn't care.
Right,
but I happen to love Dennis Quaid, and I want to see him play a nut. You know that I'm all about that. So
why not?
Yeah. All right. So that's next week. Okay, Jim. Thanks, buddy.
Okay. Thank you, man.
Talk to you next week. All right. There's Jim. All right, Eric. Let's do some box office.
Yeah. Hey,
you said, didn't you last week? Didn't you say 350 million?
I didn't go 350.
No.
I did say over 300. But I didn't. I don't think you can find anyone on the planet that said 350. I did say over 300 without question.
Yeah. Well, $350 million.
Yeah.
Across the globe, how much has it made already?
$1.2 billion.
$1.2 billion.
That's basically in like 5 days. It opened a couple days earlier overseas.
Yeah.
So in like 5 days, $1.2 billion.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
That is
almost halfway to Avatar.
Isn't that? I mean, that's just unbelievable. That is just really unbelievable. And I love the fact that Captain Marvel came in second. I don't know. I just think
that's almost the story of the week, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That Captain Marvel, which last week saw a bump because everyone was getting prepared for Endgame, and then it jumped up to number two this week. It dropped 11%. It's the 10th highest eighth weekend of all time. It's a crazy thing. It's just like, oh shoot! And I wonder if people who went and saw Captain Marvel then went and saw Endgame, just like, well, I didn't really need to do that.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of Captain Marvel in Endgame.
No, there isn't. It's good. It's quality. When she's in it, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's crazy. The top two movies in the country are Marvel and the kind of money that day. What's going to continue to? Is it going to continue to? I mean, the numbers can't sustain, right?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I was, because I'm actually doing like a whole analysis for Rotten Tomatoes tomorrow. It was like all the records that it could break along the way, and I was coming up with some really odd ones as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, the biggest second weekend of all time, I mean, pretty much all of these records going forward now are The Force Awakens, because that's the highest grossing film of all time.
Right.
So the second weekend, Force Awakens made $149 million. So that means that Endgame would have to drop more than 57.4% in a second weekend. We've never seen a number like 350 before.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Yeah.
So who knows what that number is going to be next week. Is it so front-loaded that people have already seen it? Are people going to be seeing it for the sixth, seventh time next week? So next week is going to be going to help pad the way, but I was looking at the schedule, and I think it's conceivable that the film stays on top of the box office for four straight weeks, you know, unless Detective Pikachu is really a thing, and that's going to bump it up. I still don't understand this whole thing, but then like it could like drop out of the top five by like week eight. And then, you know, we'll see, you know, where it goes from there. But, it's got nothing but records to break in front of it right now. And the next, at least by the next week or two, it's going to break a bunch of them just because of this head start that it's gotten. So, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, you know, if people are fascinated with numbers or have a real investment and want to see these movies do well, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So $350 million. Captain Marvel with $8 million. All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that. All right.
Yeah.
All right, Eric. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
There you go, Eric Childress. Remember, go to Chicago Critics Film Festival .com because the Chicago Critics Film Fest is happening in May, and you can get your tickets now. Great schedule, lots of really great guests, and all kinds of cool stuff. So, all right, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey-jokey time. He calls in every Monday morning, starting off our work week with a laugh. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're going to be talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and some of the biggest snubs of people who have not been inducted and sometimes not even been nominated. So HBO showed the ceremony just over the weekend. I've got it on my it's at home on my DVR, and I will watch it soon. That was obviously The Cure. The Cure was they were inducted as the class of 2019. Who else was inducted this year, Tom?
So we also saw Stevie Nicks get inducted, Janet Jackson, Def Leppard. My personal favorite was Radiohead getting inducted, mm-hmm. Roxy Music, and the Zombies.
I was. We were talking about this. I talked about this before. The Stevie Nicks is already in for Fleetwood Mac. I don't know if she needs to be in for her solo work.
I think she's one of the only artists, if not the only artist, to get two. She's probably one of very few.
Yeah, no, there's more than that that were inducted into way. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure, like, aren't all of the Beatles both? I mean, aren't they all inducted
twice? I'll do a little
twice,
research.
I would think. So it's, but you know, there's always, you know, like, there's always at least one or two bands where you go, what? And this year, that for me, I guess it's Def Leppard. I mean, I don't know, but you know,
those,
like,
I mean, you've said before those two Def Leppard's albums, what was it?
Yeah, Hysteria and Pyromania, mm-hmm. are both great records. There's no question about it. But still, I don't know, man. I don't know. There's always at least one. Like, I can't believe Bon Jovi's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I've this is always the sentence that I always give. Bon Jovi is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Warren Zevon has not even been nominated. Just let that sink in for a second. But there are a lot of snubs. Warren Zevon is the one that I always bring up because it's absurd that he hasn't. I mean, he's never even been nominated. He's one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time. He's written some of the most beautiful and coolest songs ever. And he's never even been nominated. I don't even... And how many times did it take for the Zombies? It took them like...
That's taken a few times.
A bunch of times for the Zombies to get inducted.
Yeah, and even
to be nominated.
Yeah, even for the nominees this year, there seems like some obvious ones like Todd Rundgren.
Yeah.
MC5, Rufus and Chaka Khan.
Yeah. Todd Rundgren, that's just absurd.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, well, here's what they say. Another year, another Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. By the way, if you guys want to jump in, what your thoughts on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. And who do you think is belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who hasn't been nominated, or any of that kind of stuff. Another year for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class, and another week full of passionate arguments from fans. There are a lot of acts to make arguments for. One thing you have to remember about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is just how young it is. The institution was established in 1983 compared to the Baseball Hall of Fame, which came about in 1939. There are a backlog of musicians who deserve to be inducted, who deserve to be, and we managed to find 100 we think have been snubbed by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominating committee and their voters. Some of them have been waiting a long time, while others could have and should have made it in this year. Here is the updated version as they have announced the class of 2019. So the first one that they talk about here is Phish. This generation's version of the Grateful Dead, Phish, is a throwback that has redefined how a band can become famous in the modern era. No band has more loyal fan base that has helped them set the bar for the jam band and concert touring over the past few decades. I think they've got enough time under their belt to be considered, you know?
Yeah, there's certain stipulations about how long you have to be together.
Isn't it 20 years?
Something to that effect.
I think so. You have
to, because that's how Radiohead is essentially getting.
Yeah,
it.
It's 20 years. I think it's 20 years. You have to be around for. You have to be established, or like your first recording had to come out 20 years ago. I think that's the actual rule. Bad Company. They're mentioned. Bad Company has the hits, longevity, and impact to argue that maybe the supergroup could have been considered and inducted before some of its recent peers that got in. I would agree with that. I think Bad Company should definitely be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And that was actually the first. That was the first band I ever saw live in concert was Bad Company, because they opened for Black Oak, Arkansas, who was the headliners.
Black Oak, Arkansas.
Black Oak, Jim Dandy to the rescue. That was their one big hit. I loved them when I was a kid. But yeah, I think Bad Company deserves it. I really do. How about this one? The Doobie Brothers. I thought for sure, I just assumed the Doobie Brothers were already inducted. They're not the coolest name on this list, not by a long shot, they say, but there's something to be said for longevity and the ability to evolve over time. The Doobie Brothers' hits and record sales are well known, while the band's influence stems from writing timeless pop songs future generations would latch onto. Yeah. Yeah, the Doobie Brothers. I don't know. I'm just surprised. I thought the Doobie Brothers were already in. The Ravens, as one of the biggest R&B doo-wop acts of the 40s and 50s, the Ravens would prove influential to virtually every vocal group that came after. How about this one? Sparks. Oh, I don't know about that.
I don't know.
Not the most well-known artist on the list or the most successful, but there's not denying Sparks' massive influence on the art rock community with bands like Sonic Youth, Nirvana, Bjork, and New Order. And they're also the star of Sparks is also the star of the movie Roller Coaster. You familiar with the movie Roller Coaster?
Yeah, in what was the name of the
Sensoround.
Sensoround.
Yeah. Basically two giant speakers blasting. So stupid. Ceilings started to fall in movie theaters.
Mm-hmm. And just for an updated number, artists become eligible for induction 25 years after the release of their first record.
It's 25 years.
Yeah,
okay.
So and not when they form, but 25 years after the release of their first record.
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was something like that. 25 years, not 20. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Nick. In my assessment, the biggest travesty with regard to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was the fact that the Moody Blues were not inducted. I think it's been rectified now.
Yeah, they're
but in. But we're not inducted for like 20-some years. ABBA was put in before they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Moody Blues were part of the British invasion under one incarnation, and then part of the psychedelic era, and they were having hits well into the 80s.
Yeah.
And they were not inducted. Well, what I came to understand, and I blogged about this, is that Jan Wenner, who I think runs the whole thing,
yeah,
will induct people if they'll buy enough tables at the event. And ABBA was capable of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, no, that's true. It's true. There's a, you know, like anything, there's a bit of politics that go into it, you know, and you got to grease the right palms in some cases. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You're
I loved Moody Blues in high school and beyond.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of artists who wait a minute, how were they not already inducted? And Moody Blues is definitely one of them. They got inducted like 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it just made me laugh.
It's crazy. You know? It's crazy. All right. Thank you, Tom.
Righto.
All right, take care. 312-981-7200. Who are the snubs? Rock and Roll Hall of Fame snubs that we're talking about? Or how about ones that got inducted but years and years and years after they should have already? All right, the news is coming up right after this, and we want to get back to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame conversation at 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and we're here. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's Monday, and that's what we do. He'll call in a little bit later on. We're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They had the induction ceremony. It was just broadcast on HBO over the weekend, and we're talking about artists who have been snubbed, artists who maybe it took them too long to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We were just talking with a listener about the Moody Blues, and that, in fact, was last year. That's how long it took for the Moody Blues to get in. And you were just playing, you just came back with a little Clapton, and you told me a little tidbit that only one person has been inducted three times.
Yep, and it was Eric Clapton.
For his solo work,
mm-hmm.
for Cream, and then Yardbirds.
Yes.
Yeah.
A great band.
Yeah, Yardbirds. So that means like Jeff Beck's at least in there twice. That means Jimmy Page is in there twice. So
if he had had more of a solo career,
yeah, yeah, not just doing the soundtrack for Death Wish 3. I think it was Death Wish 3. Maybe it was Death Wish 2. One of the Death Wish. Jimmy Page did the score for one of the Death Wish movies. It might have been 2. Might have been Death Wish 2 for the Bronson. Yeah. But yeah. Oh, man. All right. We got some texts coming in. If you guys want to jump in here with a text or a talk, it's 312-981-7200. Every year we do talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we do talk about the snubs. And we've got a list here that people have put together at cleveland.com. So the entire city is being very vocal about it.
Yes, sir.
773 area code. What is more significant is the group nominated and voted in, but snubbed the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and that's the Sex Pistols. So they snubbed of course they're the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, the text also included a lovely letter from
Lydon.
It was from I want to say it was Johnny Rotten. Yeah.
Okay, so it was Johnny Rotten. Is Malcolm McLaren still alive or is he dead?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm surprised that many of them were alive.
I think McLaren. Well, McLaren was their manager, and sort of the mastermind behind the whole thing. I can't remember whether he passed away or not. 262 area code says, "Hey Nick, I totally agree. Def Leppard, seriously? Maybe the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should have another category for strip club bands." Pour Some Sugar on Me does get played in the strip clubs.
It's a favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, 815 area code says, every year when you talk about this, I also immediately think of Warren Zevon. It's so wrong that he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I totally agree. I mean, it's absurd. And not only does he belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he hasn't even been nominated. You know, I know it takes a long time for some artists to get in. They've been nominated a few times, takes a few nominations before they go. But he hasn't even been nominated. It's just ridiculous. 815 area code says, I can't believe Nick Rivers still hasn't been inducted. Skeet Surfing is the song of a generation. Oh, Top Secret. I maintain Top Secret funnier than Airplane.
Really?
Oh, I think it's funnier than Airplane.
I do like Top Secret. Top Secret is a good.
It's funnier than Airplane. But the funniest thing that the ZAZ ever did, as far as I'm concerned, was the TV series of Police Squad, which is the funniest TV show of all time. Did you ever see the 6 episodes of Police Squad?
Yeah, oh, I went back after I became a fan of The Naked Gun.
Oh, my God.
And
Funnier than the Naked Gun movies.
I would say funnier than some of the sequels. Because there's The Naked Gun.
Naked Gun is great. Like, it's great. I like all the Naked Gun movies. The first one's really good.
First one's great.
But to me, you know, the series, and the stupidest, I mean, ABC, the people at ABC, such morons. First of all, you know, they were concerned because there was no laugh track. They tried to get the Zuckers to put a laugh track. Could you imagine a laugh track during Police Squad?
It just, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the laugh track at any point, really. If they could have taken the laugh track out of Cheers, I would have loved it. A lot of those jokes stand on their own.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, they actually, that was in front of a live audience.
Right.
You know, the laugh track that I'm talking about is like
Big Bang Theory laugh track.
And Happy Days. You know what I mean? Like, this clearly.
Canned laughter of people that died like 30 years ago.
Yeah. MASH, worst laugh track of all time, and MASH is a great show, but it was completely unneeded. I don't know who decided that they would put the laugh track. How about the Flintstones? The Flintstones have a laugh track. Was it an animated audience? I mean, the Flintstones had a laugh track. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But, you know, so Police Squad, I mean, that show was ridiculously funny, and they didn't know what ABC had no idea what to do with it. No idea. So they put it on up against really geniuses. They put this weird conceptual comedy show, which is what it is, on opposite Hill Street Blues, which was, like, at the time, the biggest show on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't, obviously, you know, it didn't last. Only 6 episodes, and they're available on DVD, and I can't even tell you. I mean, Joe Dante directed 2 episodes of Police Squad.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That'll get you ready for Gremlins.
Yeah. Okay. Also, not inducted Rufus with Chaka Khan. They say Rufus certainly played a huge role in the funk sounds of the 70s. Add Chaka Khan, and you have a powerful force with a voice for the ages and production that would be sampled in R&B and hip-hop over the next 30-plus years. Steve Winwood's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, because Blind Faith. Was he Blind Faith?
He was in Blind Faith. Yeah. He was in Traffic.
Yeah, neither of those guys are in.
That's insane. If you have a problem with Traffic being in the Rock Hall, well, there is. They are in the Rock and Hall. There is another option. Steve Winwood's influence on a few amazing bands, as well as his solo career, produces a resume that is perhaps better than that of, say, someone like Jeff Beck. Harry Nilsson's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Nope.
Oh, my God.
One of the best songwriters of the 20th century.
Oh, my God.
One of the best pop songwriters.
How is that? Man. Harry Nilsson. Nilsson is one of the singer-songwriters of his time who helped pioneer overdubbing while fusing different genres that would influence today's indie rockers. That's insane that he's not in. By the way, if you want to jump in here, 312-981-7200. Jan and Dean, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they should be. The Beach Boys popularized surf rock, but Jan and Dean pioneered it. The duo's groundbreaking California sound would become a building block for pop music throughout the 60s. Los Lobos, one of the most important Latin rock acts of all time, who have built a catalog of brilliant albums and remains impactful today. Have they ever been nominated? Los Lobos?
I'd have to take a look and see the nominate, because that's just a whole even bigger list.
Yeah, that's, I know, that's insane. The Meters. The Meters may be known as a backing band, one of the most talented ones at that, but the group was essential, as anyone not named James Brown in taking the music Little Richard pioneered and transitioning it to into funk.
Whenever I hear the sissy strut, I always think of Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
That just popped right there.
Dolly Parton's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? a country singer who became a true pop culture icon, influencing the career of future female country stars, as well as pop singers like Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus. She's just a national treasure, Dolly Parton. She is, man. She should be in all halls of fame. They should just make halls of fame. They should just make a Dolly Parton Hall of Fame. Just an entire category just for her. I love Dolly Parton, man. She's great.
You ever been to Dollywood?
Yeah.
What's that like? I've always wanted to go.
It's very cool. It's very cool. Yeah. My ex-girlfriend's family, when we were dating, they still do. They live in Franklin, Tennessee. And that's where Dollywood is, right out there. And so we went. We went. And it was pretty cool. The Marvelettes, overshadowed by other female soul groups of the same era, namely the Supremes. The Marvelettes songs are among some of the most important in R&B history, such as Please Mr. Postman and Don't Mess with Bill. Pavement, yeah.
That's going to take some time.
Yeah, it is. Maybe the band doesn't have to have the recognition as the Pixies or the Smiths, but Pavement may just be the most important indie rock band of the 90s. Countless of other current musicians emulate both in mentality and sound. Are the Pixies in?
I don't believe so.
What? We'll have to find out if the Pixies are in.
I've not on my list here.
Oh, man.
Yeah, which is, I mean, a lot of acts from that era, especially the more alternative acts. I mean, Radiohead getting in it is kind of surprising, honestly. I thought it would be a few more years.
Yeah. I don't know, man. The Pixies, though, man.
They're amazing.
Ugh.
I saw them when I was in high school. They played Doolittle back to front, and Kim Deal was still in the band at that point.
Yeah, I saw the Pixies three or four times. My second favorite band out of Boston, first being Buffalo Tom. Ike from Country Club Hills said Jimmy Page did the soundtrack for both Death Wish 2 and 3. Oh, okay.
He's a workhorse.
Jimmy Page. You know, I saw Zeppelin twice. I saw them in 75. They were great. In 77, they were terrible. They were loaded. Everybody on that stage except for John Paul Jones was loaded.
That seems like it was a lot of nights.
For
poor JPJ.
Oh, yeah. No. He was. You could tell he was on stage going, am I the only pro here? Am I the only professional on the stage?
And he went on to have a pretty long career just working with a lot of bands.
Yeah.
Especially because he was classically trained.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that night that I saw him in 77, Page was on a folding chair for most of the show. He was so loaded. And the normal tradition, Robert Plant would come out with a sealed bottle of Jack Daniels and break the seal at the beginning of the show and then drink it throughout the show. Well, he came out, the bottle was 3/4 of the way empty already. At the top of the show, I was like, oh, this is going to be real special. Seven seven three area code says 3 more years until Limp Bizkit is eligible.
Finally.
Oh, God.
The stars of Woodstock 99.
Oh, my God. 312 area code said, last I heard, Jethro Tull isn't. No, they're not. Jethro Tull isn't in the Hall of Fame. Stand up benefit Aqualung alone should get them. I totally agree. I know there's an anti-Jethro Tull movement out there. People think that they suck, and there's no flute. There should be no flute in rock and roll.
No.
Jethro Tull rules.
Tull, what they did? What was it? Thick as a Brick.
Yeah,
that's an amazing concept album.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Jethro Tull is great. Terry says, Nick, on Blu-ray, you can turn off MASH's laugh track, and it's much better. Oh, all right.
That's a nice feature.
Yeah. No stupid laugh track.
When they're delivering, their best lines.
Yeah. All right. We got a lot more here. Who are the snubs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Who hasn't been inducted? Who hasn't been nominated? What do you think? What do you think of the current state of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We'll continue the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame snub conversation and more after this. So did you purposely play that as maybe he shouldn't be inducted in the Rock and Roll?
Kidding me? This is it. This is the song.
Oh, man.
Feel that bass line.
It's Nighttime at the Switching Yard, the only song by Warren Zevon that I can't stand. And again, when Androgynous Mustache with Chris Anderson and all those other guys and the lovely Rachel Drew, every year when they play that song at the Warren Zevon birthday bash that they do every year, they always dedicate that song to me. Which
good
is ridiculous.
Deserve it.
Oh, man. So we're in the live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All that is coming up. We're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and every year when they do the induction ceremony, we like to talk a little bit about it, and of course talk about who has been snubbed and who hasn't been. Not even nominated, and it's always really, really surprising. Like I think so far during this conversation, I think the one that I mean, there's a lot of these are like hugely shocking and big. But I can't. But I think the one that really stands out right now is Harry Nilsson. I can't even comprehend that he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame,
because there's a number of inductees that came after him that probably don't have a career without Harry.
Exactly
Nilsson.
Right. Exactly right. How about this one? A Tribe Called Quest. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Boy, they had a great year a couple of years ago, man.
Yeah, they came and did that new album.
Oh, man.
This is great.
Call it backpack rap, alternative rap, or whatever you want. No act had a bigger impact on the genre that would inspire artists like Kanye West, Chance the Rapper, Drake, quite like Q-Tip, Fife, and company. Yeah, Tribe Called Quest. Great. P.E. just got in a few years ago, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think, well, actually, if it's 25 years, then they got in pretty quick.
There's some that do really quick turnaround.
Well, I mean, deservedly so. Public Enemy, I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
X. Again, how? Another one of the innovative West Coast punk bands that the Rock Hall has yet to embrace. X helped push punk rock to its next phase while adding to the evolution of alternative rock.
And their part in the decline of Western civilization is legendary.
Yeah. Peter, Paul, and Mary. When you think of the early folk scene and the dominant artists, you think Bob Dylan and Joan Baez, but Peter, Paul, and Mary's rise to fame marked a key point in which folk music moved out of Greenwich Village and into the mainstream. That's true. The B-52s. Yeah, man, I love the B-52s.
So much fun.
Despite being innovators of the new wave genre, the B-52s have never been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The band's been eligible since 2004. 15 years, and they've not been even nominated, the B-52s. Come on, man.
Just on the strength of Rock Lobster alone.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're great. Mott the Hoople. Led by one of the great British songwriters of all time, Ian Hunter, Mott the Hoople's blending of sounds and genres along with its attitude would prove highly influential for future bands of various genres. Jane's Addiction. There have been and will be a lot of bands inducted who owe something to Jane's Addiction. The band's late 80s work is essential in expanding the concept of hard rock, and that would impact future funk rock and grunge, among other genres. That's hard to believe that they had to have been nominated, though, right? Jane's Addiction, they've had to be.
I think maybe at some point.
You know?
Honestly, I'll be real with you. I've never really seen the appeal of Jane's Addiction.
Oh, come on, man.
Seriously.
Wow.
I know they're huge. I know Perry Farrell went on to start Lollapalooza. That's his baby. But I've never really had someone convince me that I need to be listening to Jane's Addiction on a regular basis.
Wow. I don't even know how to respond to that. Joe Cocker. How in God's name is Joe Cocker not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? How is that even possible? Joe Cocker's voice has redefined some of the greatest songs of all time while scoring some of his own unique hits. Perhaps his passing 2 years ago will shine the spotlight on his stellar career. Joe Cocker, man. Ridiculous. I love Joe Cocker.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
I liked his cameo a lot in Across the Universe.
Oh, it's fantastic.
So glad to see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Singing Come Together. Fantastic. You can't make a Beatles movie and not have Joe Cocker in it.
Gotta.
You know, like if you're going to do, I mean, you know, obviously they knew that going in. It's like, right. Well, we have to acknowledge Joe Cocker because some of his biggest hits were Beatles covers. The Runaways. How the hell are The Runaways not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Is Joan Jett in?
I'm going to take a look. I have a feeling that Joan Jett might be in, but not The Runaways.
You could easily make a case that Joan Jett's first band was far more important than her time fronting the Blackhearts. The Runaways were the start of that edgy female punk sound that should have been honored years ago. I can't believe. Is she in?
Joan Jett is in as Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Come on,
but
man.
Not the Runaways.
Come on, man. And not to take anything away from Joan Jett and the Blackhearts,
no,
because
they're
love
great,
Joan Jett.
But
come on, man.
Lita Ford.
Is she in? There's no way she's in solo. No, there's no way that Lita Ford is in solo.
Lita Ford is not.
Okay.
So.
And Sherry's not. She's obviously
no,
not
no,
in.
No.
Boy, I was disappointed with that movie.
I thought it was okay.
I thought Michael Shannon was amazing.
Michael Shannon's great. I think the movie itself was not awesome, but I really liked Kristen Stewart.
Oh, me too.
She was great. Perfect choice for Joan Jett and Dakota Fanning.
And Dakota Fanning, yeah. I mean, the cast was... I was just a little disappointed with the script. It seemed like just pretty pedestrian.
Yeah.
And kind of...
cut and paste.
Cliched, yeah. Let's see. De La Soul. 3 Feet High and Rising, man. De La Soul brought the art of skits sampling and an alternative of rapping the hip-hop, rapping music at the hip-hop at the time, that it was sorely needed. You could make the case that the group's brand of backpack rap has endured longer than gangster rap. De La Soul is great. They're great.
Yeah, Me, Myself, and I?
It's a classic.
You still can't get them on streaming services, though, because their music's all tied up in rights.
Is that right?
Yeah. They do not, unfortunately, do not have control of most of their library, and they've been just unable to get it on any sort of streaming service. So you look it up on Spotify or whatever, can't get it.
That's crazy. That sucks. Oh, wait a minute now. How in God's name is War not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? How is that? I can't even... One of the essential funk bands of all time that broke down color lines, the group band began as a vehicle for Eric Burdon, but went on to achieve massive success even without him. I can't believe that they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't even know what to say here. War? Have they been nominated? They've had to have been nominated.
I'm going to take a look and see if
they've had to have been nominated. There's no way that War has not been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, but I'm a little distracted because Amy Guth is on TV painting walls.
I'm floored by it.
I don't She's on Weekend Workbench. I turn around and there's Amy painting like and hanging up plants and stuff. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
I mean,
she's lovely. I love her. She's she's the lovely Amy Guth. But that's, I was just a little distracted. I turn and I look. I'm like, Amy Guth is drilling a hole.
I will say I just sent her a tweet. I mean, she won't see it till a few hours from now, but I need answers.
Well, you produced her show.
Yeah, worked with her for 2 years.
Yeah.
Never seen her with a power tool in her life, although I never doubted she could use one. And now I'm seeing her professionally painting and power sawing like the best.
It was a little distracting. She used to follow my Saturday show.
Right.
When I was on Saturday. So I would get to see the lovely Amy Guth every Saturday. And it was always a treat. A little crosstalk with her because she's a lovely, lovely woman. And then I'm just looking around, and I'm like, what is she doing on this? What is going on here?
Workbench.
Am I hallucinating? All right. We got a break here. The news is coming up, and then we'll come back. What do you think about this Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Who should be inducted, and who has been snubbed? 312-981-7200. Yeah. War, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I can tell you when that song is played in Dazed and Confused.
When is it?
It's when the senior girls are hazing the freshmen. Fry like bacon! Smile. You love us. Smile.
Air Raid.
Air Raid, man. Parker Posey.
I do shout that at my girlfriend sometimes, just being annoying. Hey, Lord. Air Raid!
One of my favorite moments in the movie is when Parker Posey, she's all drunk at the Moon Tower, and she comes up to to Tony and to the girl that he's, the freshman girl that he's talking with, and she's like, okay, freshman, Air Raid, and she's loaded. Tony goes, well, she doesn't have to air raid because she's with me. And Parker Posey is just so dismissive. She just goes, anyway, air raid, like completely dismissed. Oh, man. I love that movie. Okay, we are talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They announced the 2019 candidates or the inductees, the class. We're talking about people who are not part of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and that they should be. And some of which hadn't even been nominated. And, it's a crime. 913 area code says monkeys deserve it despite how they began. 773 area code said, Janet should not have gotten in ahead of Todd Rundgren, but I voted for them both. 630 area code says Foreigner in America. Yeah, I guess I could see that.
I could definitely see America.
Yeah. Yeah, and Foreigner even. You know, they sold
Foreigners had, yeah,
they were big.
Big hits.
Big hits. Someone says Def Leppard's music sales versus Warren Zevon, no contest. But let's talk about the quality of the music. No contest is right. Warren Zevon, far superior. Not even in the same category. Let's see. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Morning.
Hey, before I list my nominations that I think should be in there, is King Crimson in it?
I think so.
King Crimson is in it.
I'm almost positive that they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah.
I hope so. How about Robin Trower?
Robin Trower is definitely not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's a shame. Along with Rory Gallagher, Wayne Gray, Grand Funk Railroad, Jethro Tull, and Kansas. All of them should have been in there long ago.
Ah, yeah, those are all good choices. Those are all good choices, yeah. All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, Nick.
All right, take care. How about this? Patsy Cline is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oof.
One of the first country artists to take hold of the pop charts, Patsy Cline is the most important and influential woman in country music's rich history. Outkast, they still got a little ways to go, right?
Their first album would have come out probably early 90s.
Yeah.
They're probably just reaching eligibility.
There might be earlier hip-hop acts on your list before Outkast, but there aren't bigger or more impactful. Outkast may very well be the greatest hip-hop group of all time who crossed over to a massive pop success and put Atlanta rap on the map. Well, that's true.
Yeah, those guys changed the game.
Yeah. I'll tell you what though. In the fall of 2003, I got a little bit tired of Hey Ya.
I still get a little bit tired of it.
I mean, it was like, come on, man. I mean, seriously.
Well, that was, I was in like the fourth grade. So it was a clean song that you could play on pretty much any radio station.
Yeah.
And so it got marketed to us relentlessly.
It was everywhere, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it was everywhere.
Made on Kids Bop.
I remember that era, that time period, that fall of 2003. The two things that stand out for me, well, three things, because we had just opened a play called Here Comes a Regular, that I co-wrote and directed, and so that's a big part of that time period. But it was that damn song everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cubs postseason.
Oh yeah,
that, and of course the Bartman game was right around that time. But man, that song, oh my god, everywhere. How about this? Mary Wells is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Wells is an important part of getting African American music on the radio during the '60s, and she was one of the key figures in Motown, arguably its greatest female solo act. A band like Can has the same problem as Kraftwerk. Their high art style doesn't stick with your typical hard rock voters, but the band's experimental rock has gone on to influence about as many artists as anyone else on this list. That's true. Very true. Very weird band, though. I mean, it would be cool, but I don't see that happening.
No.
Here's one. Pat Benatar. How is Pat Benatar not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
You know, I was looking into it. They're like campaigns to get Pat Benatar.
Yeah, because she belongs. She should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm.
For some reason, women just don't get the love that they deserve when it comes to the Rock Hall. If a man had the resume of hits and impact on rock music that Benatar did, he would have been inducted already. That's ridiculous that she's not. I mean, she's Pat Benatar, man.
Yeah. Love is a battlefield. We belong.
There's so many. I mean,
with
she
the
had
best shots.
She had so many songs, man. I mean,
she was a stay growing up listening to The Drive. Like that was. She was on every hour.
I saw her. I've seen Pat Benatar live a bunch of times, and always great. And she's got an unbelievable voice. Mm-hmm. Like her voice is ridiculous. And. She's a badass, man. I mean, just like a rock god, you know? Lonnie Donegan, the biggest and most influential British artist of the pre-Beatles era, remains one of the most towering figures in UK music history. Oh, man, the Go-Go's. The first all-female band to score a number one album that was completely written and recorded by themselves. The Go-Go's are one of the biggest and most important female acts of all time, they say. I totally agree with that. I saw them twice open up for The Police.
Oh, that's got to be a pretty good show.
It was great. Actually, three times. I saw them three times. It was the Ghost and Machine Tour. Yeah. One of the many, many times I saw The Police. Oh, God.
Especially during that time. Ghost of the Machine's a great record.
Yeah, fantastic. I've said this before, that my favorite band of that period, without question, is The Police. And they existed for the entire 4 years of my high school. Their first album came out in 1979. Their last album came out in 1983. Those are the years I went
to
high
school.
That's wild. And then the summer of 83, they ended up breaking up in, you know, they were around into 84. A Synchronicity tour, you know, that went on forever. Mm-hmm. We got kicked off here in Chicago. The very first date of the Synchronicity tour was at Comiskey, Old Comiskey.
Oh, man.
And it was The Police headlining, and the opening acts were, Joan Jett, and she got booed off the stage.
Right.
The Fix, Flock of Seagulls, and Ministry. And that was when Ministry sounded like Depeche Mode. Because there was a time period where Ministry
sounded like Depeche
Mode. They sounded like Depeche Mode. And their first record, With Sympathy, is a new wave poppy Depeche Mode kind of album. And it wasn't until, because he had Jorgensen signed a contract with the record label, and they made him do the album that way. He wanted to do the hardcore. He wanted to do the industrial stuff, which I can't stand. I love the
first mystery.
I love it. Have I told you the story of my buddy Joe? Hey, listen.
No.
And his encounter with Al Jorgensen?
No.
Oh, I'm not
hanging out with Ministry.
Well, Joe was Joe. God bless him. God bless his soul. Joe was a producer. He produced records and stuff, and he was an engineer. So he was working on he did dance stuff. That's what he loved. And Joe was the biggest Depeche Mode fan on the planet. There was no bigger Depeche Mode fan on the planet than Joe. They're the greatest band of all time. He loved Depeche Mode, and he loved the first Ministry album because it was that kind of music. And now it's known notoriously that Al Jorgensen is not the nicest guy in the world. He's had some serious issues with drugs and things like that. And he's kind of a bit of a lunatic, driving around 80 miles an hour with the dreadlocks, and looks like he hasn't had a bath in about 5 months. And he hates the first album. He hates With Sympathy. That's Ministry's first album, With Sympathy. He hates it. Doesn't even speak of it. Kind of denies that ever existed, was so happy to get out of the contract and do the kind of music that he wanted to do. And Joe, my friend Joe, hated the industrial stuff. Hated it. And thought, I can't believe this band has turned into this crap. Because he loves With Sympathy. So he's at a studio in downtown Chicago. And there are he's in a facility, and there are like three different studios. And he was working with a band in one studio, and Ministry was working, or Jorgensen was working in another studio down the hall, and so Joe didn't really even realize this. Joe goes to they have like a common room where they have pop machine, coffee, and all that stuff. And so he's getting like a coffee or something, and all of a sudden Al Jorgensen comes in, worse for the wear. Okay, he comes in and just kind of walks in, and Joe goes, "Hey, Al Jorgensen." Jorgensen just kind of looks at him. And Joe goes, Hey, listen. What the hell happened after that first album? Jorgensen spit at him and told him to F off. And he walked out, and Joe goes, "Hey, that's a little rude," as he walked out. But the thing was that Joe wasn't doing it. Joe was being very sincere. It wasn't like he wanted to
antagonize.
No, he just said, "Hey, listen, what the hell happened after that first album?
This is a man I really wish I could have met.
Oh, yeah.
But I gotta say, maybe if he wanted to sound a little bit nicer, he shouldn't have said, "What the hell happened?"
That's Joe, though, man. I mean, that was Joe.
Oh, man.
Did I tell you the Oliver Stone?
Yeah.
Okay, I told you that one.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm looking at a picture of Al Jorgensen in the With Sympathy era. He does look like a Depeche Mode reject.
Oh, there's no question about it.
He's got the real short hair.
Oh, there's no,
turtleneck.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's in that album. If you ever listen to that album, it is full on early 80s, new wave.
I might like it.
It's great.
And I got to admit, there's some, Ministry during their heyday. I do enjoy some of it.
Well, they also did that. He also did a single, which ended up on one of them beer commercials, called Every Day is Halloween. Do you know Every Day is Halloween?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like industrial stuff. I did not know that was. That's Ministry.
Ministry.
Yeah. That's Ministry. And Joe loved that. That song rules. So
I probably thought it was Depeche Mode.
Yeah. So, all right, we got a break here, and we'll come back. We got more Rock and Roll Hall of Fame notes here. If you want to jump in, who do you think should be nominated? Who isn't? Who's been snubbed? 312-981-7200. That's Ministry, everybody. That's what they used to say. That's what they used to sound like.
That's good.
I love that album.
That's great.
Al Jorgensen does not.
What does he know?
As evidenced by his reaction to my friend Joe. "Hey, what the hell happened after that first album?" Oh, man. All right. How you doing, everybody? We're back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Ministry, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Not with that attitude.
No, no way. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame had their induction ceremony over the... Well, they showed it on HBO over the weekend. And it always... Every year we talk about it, and every year we're talking about, like, who deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who hasn't even been nominated, snubs, and those of who are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We were just talking about the Go-Go's not being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. And let's see. Ben E. King, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He is inducted as a member of the Drifters. Benny King deserves serious consideration for his solo career. His voice showcased one of the greatest songs of all time, Stand By Me, became an influence and for countless artists in various genres moving forward. Beck, not even nominated for the class of 2019. There will come a day when Beck is recognized as one of the finest solo artists of the past 25 years, whose catalog ranks with the best of his era.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about Beck.
Yeah.
He'll get in at some point.
Yeah, I agree. Fairport Convention 815 area code says Fairport Convention Steel Eye Span, both bands great folk rock. 765 area code says Todd Rundgren, we've already discussed what a crime that is. The Raspberries aren't in, and Badfinger, those are great choices.
Those, I do love the Raspberries.
The Raspberries are fantastic. Badfinger's great too. Let's see. Kate Bush, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. One of the biggest artists in UK history, whose inventive pop sounds influenced an endless number of today's female singers, songwriters, and producers, should be considered for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Alice in Chains. I could see that. Alice in Chains separated itself from other big grunge bands in that its sound was harsher. That would help the band become a force in metal and hard rock scenes, with Layne Staley's voice helping shape those genres as much as any artist of the early 90s. How is Brian Eno not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
That's insane.
Why am I just...
Brian Eno not as a singular artist, but he's been inducted as part of Roxy Music.
Right, right.
But just his producing alone.
Well, no question about it. Eno has been snubbed twice, once with Roxy Music... and once for his inventive solo career, which essentially shaped pop music for the indie generation. Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
No band represents the spirit of thrash metal more than Slayer, which makes the act one of the most influential in heavy metal history. Slayer's impact can be felt today in the sounds of metal acts like Slipknot, Bullet, or My Valentine and Lamb of God. Bullet for My Valentine and Lamb of God. Slayer has one of my favorite album titles of all time. One of my favorite album titles, and considering the kind of music that they play, my favorite title of a Slayer album, and one of my favorite titles of all time is South of Heaven.
Oh yeah,
that's one of the greatest. It's one of the greatest album. One of the greatest album titles ever.
Do you listen to Slayer at all?
It's not my
cup of tea.
Not really.
Oh man.
No, the thrash stuff's not. I mean, it's every once in a while, you know.
If you're in the mood.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not. It's not really my thing.
I got thrown into detention for wearing a Slayer shirt.
Was it the South of Heaven?
Yeah, actually, it was from the South of Heaven tour. And the best part is that it's cut off. I still have it. It's like cut off at the shoulder.
Yeah.
So you know, shows
sleeveless.
Off. Yeah, sleeveless.
Yeah. That's that. Well, yeah, I think all Slayer shirts eventually are sleeveless.
As God intended.
Yeah. Procol Harum. Procol Harum's music during the late 60s and 70s was unlike anything before it, redefining progressive rock by incorporating a classical influence into its soul and blues sounds. Yeah, they were a great band, Procol Harum. Oh, now come on now. Buzzcocks, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Come on, man. Arguably the most influential punk band of all time, whose amazingly catchy singles laid the groundwork for pop punk. Buzzcocks should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They, without question, they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Merle Haggard? What?
My favorite country artist.
Will fully admit that Merle Haggard is as country as it gets. Still, he influenced several big-name rock artists and helped inspire country rock. Willie Nelson. The Rock Hall hasn't honored country music in the way it should, but if it is to put another name from the genre on the ballot, it should be Willie Nelson, whose crossover success impacted more than just country musicians. I saw Willie Nelson and his family. They opened for Dave, and his son's band.
Wait, for who?
Dave Matthews.
Oh,
his son's band. I've seen. I'm a massive fan of Dave Matthews. Like, I've seen him over 30 something times.
Really?
Oh yeah. No, I'm a huge Dave. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You're one of those tripping Billies.
I am without unapologetically.
That's
now, and
fine.
I understand. I understand that the percentage of douchebags at per foot at a Dave Matthews show is sky high. I know that. I've never worn puka shells in my life.
You're unlike the several people that bullied me throughout high school.
I do not have cargo shorts. I used to wear my baseball cap backwards, but that was when I thought I was in hip hop.
Different sort of stuff.
Yeah. But I acknowledge that, like, I mean, when I've seen Dave a bunch of times, and there really hasn't been a time that I've seen Dave where I didn't want to punch somebody in the face in the audience. But the music is so great, I don't care.
Some of the most talented musicians
on the planet. Carter Beauford's the best drummer on the planet. He's the best drummer on the planet. And everybody in that band, you can't get better musicians than that. I know a lot of people are like, yeah, but too bad they played Dave's music.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would say, is that Dave Matthews went on a mission to find every musician who was better than him.
Yeah.
Which you have to admit is admirable. He knows what he is. I'm sure Dave Matthews isn't like I'm as good as Carter Beauford.
Well, Carter Beauford. I mean, I've never seen anything. I play drums and he's the best drummer alive right now, as far as I'm concerned. He's unbelievable, and he does it all smiling and blowing bubble gum all the time.
Yeah,
like doing things with his hands and feet. I'm going, how in God's name is he doing that and blowing bubbles? And he's always he seems the happiest guy in the world.
Yeah. Imagine how bubbles feels.
Yeah. All right, we got a break. The news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. You know, now that I think about it, Todd Rundgren should be inducted twice for his solo work and Utopia.
Mm-hmm.
He should be in there twice. That's it. Yeah.
he's great.
Oh, he's unbelievable. He was just in town.
He was just here.
Yeah, he was
here at the station with, was he on with Steve?
Was it Steve or was it?
May have been Roe. You know,
it might have been Roe.
I think it was Roe.
Yeah. But yeah, Todd Rundgren. Come on, man. He's the best. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about the snubs of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about my main man, Craig Ferguson, who yesterday was the date years ago. Was 4 years ago or 5 years ago?
It was in 2014.
Okay, 5 years ago when he announced that he was leaving late night. And nothing and no one could replace him. There was no better late night show than the Late Late Show with Craigie Ferg. And my future ex-wife was on that show. Dana DiLorenzo, my future ex-wife. So we got memories to talk about with Craig Ferguson and talking a little bit about that, how we miss him. But right now we're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and if you'd like to join us, we would love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Some of the people that have been snubbed, they say, Big Mama Thornton, who did the original Hound Dog, version of Hound Dog. Duran Duran, another band that Joe loved. Oh, man, Duran Duran rules. He loved Duran Duran. Loudest concert I've ever been to, Duran Duran. I've seen Black Sabbath. I've seen Motorhead. I've seen a lot of loud bands. Loudest concert I've ever seen in my life was Duran Duran. It was because they had to crank it up over the female screaming. That's why it was the loudest, because there was nothing but... I mean, this was in 1985. We saw them in 1985. This is at the height of Duran Duran's popularity. Seven and the Ragged Tiger had just come out, and it was just mayhem. You compare it to the Beatles. It was just like nothing but girls screaming at the top of their voices throughout the entire show. It did not stop.
I feel like people don't do that at concerts anymore. It's not as insane.
It was crazy loud. Like, crazy loud. And, you know, they had the big video screens behind them, because at the Horizon, this is Rosemont or Allstate Arena now.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the video screens, and every time they would get the level of screaming would go up or down depending on who they were showing. Like when it was ear piercing whenever John Taylor was shown. Like when they showed John Taylor, the whole place just went nuts. He was clearly the favorite of all the Duran Duran members. The girls loved John Taylor, and Roger Taylor, the drummer. Oh, three Taylors in that band, not related.
What?
Roger Taylor, Andy Taylor, John Taylor, not related.
I honestly thought at least two of them would be related.
No, they're not.
Wow,
not
just related. Three dudes named Taylor.
Exactly. I would consider Duran Duran for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yeah. Impactful. They were during the MTV era, there were very few bands that were as big and embraced MTV like they did.
Yeah, their videos were game changing.
Absolutely.
They some of the most probably the most popular videos of the decade.
Yeah. Peter Tosh. How is Peter Tosh not in? How is that? I mean, if you're looking at the most influential reggae artist of all time, not named Bob Marley, you could go with Peter Tosh. Yeah. Motorhead. Why is Motorhead not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Because they hate metal. That's why.
Have you seen Airheads?
Yeah.
My favorite line in Airheads is when Harold Ramis, the late, great Harold Ramis. God, I miss you and love you. He is a cop pretending to be a record exec to get in to the radio station, which these idiot heavy metal guys have taken over. Brendan Fraser,
Adam Sandler.
Who was the... Oh, Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
That's right.
What a trio.
Joe Montana is the DJ.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I know I think that movie's very, very funny.
But, it's a very specific product of its time.
Oh, no question about it. But I really like that movie. I think it's very funny. But my favorite line is when they send Harold Ramis up to pretend that he's like a record guy and he wants to negotiate with them, but in fact he is an undercover cop. They're trying to trick the band. So they decide that they're going to ask him questions to see if he is indeed if he's not a cop. So the first question they ask him, is who would win the fight, Lemmy or God? Who would win the fight, Lemmy or God? And Harold Ramis goes, he answers, Lemmy. And then I think it's Sandler, or maybe it's Buscemi. Buscemi goes, no, sorry, trick question, Lemmy is God. But then it's he goes, give me another chance. They're like, okay. in the Van Halen breakup, who do you side with, Eddie Van Halen or David Lee Roth? And he goes, Eddie Van Halen. And they immediately go, he's a cop, close the door. That was a funny movie, man. Oh man. Yeah, Motorhead deserves to be in. Diana Ross is not in. New Order, not in.
That's a damn shame.
It's ridiculous.
They need New Order and Joy Division need to be in.
Both of them. I agree. George Michael, I totally agree. He should be in twice.
Little wham.
Little wham and then the solo. I loved every George Michael reference in Keanu.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. that movie's hilarious, by the way. The Jam. Come on!
Because you need to have The Jam and Paul Weller.
Come on now. Dead Kennedys, another one. But do they just not like punk? Is that the...
I think there's a few genres that they just don't like.
Nick Drake.
Oh.
Maybe they just don't want to be depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
815 area code. No Jay Giles. Jay Giles, they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They've ever been nominated?
Yeah, Jay Giles ain't in.
Joe from Richmond says, "Hey Nick, why the hell is Styx, REO Speedwagon, Pat Benatar not in it?" We've already talked about the Pat Benatar. Not a fan of those first two bands.
Styx, I guarantee you Styx will get in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they will. They've sold billions of records. REO Speedwagon sold a lot of records, too. When when High Infidelity came out, that album was massive. Time for me to fly! 605 area code. Maybe you've mentioned them already, but I don't think Blue Oyster Cult is in. And then the largest snub of all is Nancy Sinatra. It's a crime. 815 area code. Nancy Sinatra's not in. The Spinners. Come on, man. We can't have a Fly Jam Friday without the Spinners.
They're missing out on some, like, classic groups.
Yeah.
Like, the Zombies taking this long to get in is pretty surprising.
Captain Beefheart? Only one of the most important single albums of all time.
Yeah.
Eurythmics. Ooh, I love Eurythmics.
Mm-hmm. That was one of my parents' favorite groups.
Yeah, they were great. I saw Eurythmics and Count. Man, that Annie Lennox can sing.
That's another double. Honestly.
I agree.
Annie Lennox should be in.
I think Dave Stewart should be in too for his production work and his film scores.
Mm-hmm.
Smashing Pumpkins. That's kind of surprising. Eric B. and Rakim, yes, Eric B. and Rakim should be in the yes. Depeche Mode. Well, you know, Joe. Hey, they should have been put in. They should have made the Hall of Fame for Depeche Mode. LL Cool J isn't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, nominated this year, but did not make it.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous.
I mean, for NCIS LA alone.
Black Flag, another punk band.
Yeah, but I guarantee you Henry Rollins would probably just say no.
He probably would, wouldn't he?
Yeah, it's not really his bag.
Dick Dale? Yeah, man. WC Handy? The Pixies, yes, there we go. Finally, they mentioned the Pixies. The Replace. All right, I'm done.
What do we say about punk?
The Replacements, one of the greatest bands of all time.
Mm-hmm. If the Dead Kennedys ain't in,
the Replacements
sure
is the thing. Is the thing. I don't know if I would have made it through the '80s if it weren't for the Replacements. And I don't know. I'm being pretty serious about that. I adore the Replacements. They are an unbelievable band. Now. Was always an iffy situation if you were going to see them live. What are you going to get? Are they going to be drunk and terrible? Are they going to be drunk and great? Or are they going to be sober and great? Those were your those were your choices. Which Westerberg is going to be there? Drunk Westerberg? I was at the show in 91, in 1991 at Taste of Chicago. To patrol a band shell at Grant Park when they broke up on stage. They started switching instruments. They broke up on stage. It was legendary. It was a legendary show.
I am a little bit shocked to hear that they would be able to, or that they would book the Replacements for Taste of Chicago, not because of a lack of quality, but they're just asking for trouble.
Well, that's the thing, man. Like I said, but they were one of the greatest bands. I mean, seriously, they're one of the greatest bands of all time. And I mean, they changed music. They were an important band, especially for, you know, like people who were around my age. You know, I was in my 20s in the 80s, and yeah, they were an important band. They were really, really an important band. And people who love the Replacements really, really love the Replacements. And so. But seeing them live, I remember I saw them one time. They were so loaded that they could barely even stand. And we've talked about this. Well, you were off. It was one of the mornings that you were off when we talked about Saturday Night Live, people that have been like canned from Saturday that have not been asked to come back for Saturday Night Live. They were on, they were only been on once. The replacements only been on once. They were asked not to come back because they were so loaded. It was, I mean, I don't even think you can, you could probably watch the footage. You could probably watch it on YouTube. Yeah. But yeah. Oh, the replacements. Okay. A few more here that we're going to get into, and we want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. And after four, we're going to remember the great Craig Ferguson, The Late Late Show, which is currently hosted by the worst host on late night TV. They went from, like, the best host to the worst host. Corden in his car singing.
My mom loves that. And she tries to get me to watch Carpool Karaoke. I'm not putting that
on. Well, I will say this. I will say this. The Paul McCartney one was awesome.
Well, yeah.
that was awesome.
It's just like, you know what? I had this, you know, there's a dog turd on my food, but the food was like a prime rib. Yeah. So it's like, you could do worse.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame conversation. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Another crime. This just continues to, I mean, with every name that pops up, T-Rex not in the hall, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
This dude changed the electric guitar.
I don't even understand.
I'm pretty sure I started playing electric guitar because of the cover of Electric Warrior.
I
wanted to look like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Hey, how you doing, everybody? Welcome back. We're talking about snubs from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and there have been plenty. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up, though, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All coming up. How about this? Rage Against the Machine? Not a big fan of Rage Against the Machine.
I'm super into them.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand. I mean, they politically, they're very charged politically. They're local. So we should always get behind that. The Shangri-Las, not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Dominoes, Joy Division, as we mentioned earlier. Mariah Carey, well, that's fine. Jethro Tull, Link Wray. Tina Turner's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Again, twice. She deserves to be in twice. Soundgarden.
They'll get in soon.
They need to.
I'm a little bit annoyed that Pearl Jam is in, but Soundgarden isn't.
Well, I mean,
and I like Pearl Jam a lot.
Yeah, I mean, they both should be in.
Yes,
Carole King. Wait a second. Carole King is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. One of the greatest songwriters in the history of music, Tapestry, one of the most important and greatest records ever recorded, and she's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Absurd. Let's see. Here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick. How are you doing tonight?
All right.
Hey, I've been listening to you almost every night since you came on the air with your full show, or, you know, when it became your show.
Yeah.
And I remember it was you talking about a group came out at a concert and their drummer was too stoned or sick to play and didn't. Was it you saying that they just announced the crowd asking if there's anybody that knew how to play drums?
That was the Who, Rich.
Are they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
The Who?
Yeah.
Yeah, they should be. If they're not, of course they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Who has to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So did the backup drummer get inducted with them the backup goalie should have for the Blackhawks pulled out of the crowd?
No, when they got inducted, there, you know, Keith Moon was already dead. So when they got inducted, but it's a true story. Keith Moon thought it would be a good idea to take a couple of horse tranquilizers before the concert. That's what he did. He took two horse tranquilizers before the show and then passed out two songs in. So they asked if there was a drummer in the house, and someone said yeah, and the guy climbed up on stage and he played with the Who.
Well, that'd look good on your resume if you're starting a garage band.
I mean, it's crazy. You know? It's crazy. This guy, could you imagine? You're just some dude and you're going to see The Who, and the next thing you know, you're on stage with them and you're playing because Keith Moon took horse tranks before the...
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
Going back to hockey, that'd be like that accountant. That
The accountant.
The backup for whoever. You know, and all of a sudden he became the Blackhawk star for the week.
I was so rooting for that guy, man. That's such a That was such a great story. All right, Rich, thanks, buddy.
All right. Yep, have a good evening.
Okay, you too. Yeah, true story, man. Keith Moon. Yeah, I'm going to take a couple of horse tranquilizers before. He was a lunatic.
You know what makes you really good at drumming? Horse tranquilizers.
Exactly. Exactly. Big star not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's awful.
Is Alex Chilton in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
That's a good question.
Because that's another twofer. That's another twofer. One of my favorite memories ever, Tom. We were in New York doing our 3-week run of Vinyl Shop at the Fringe Festival in New York City, which was amazing. And so we had a day off. We didn't have a performance one day. And so they used to have these free concerts at lunchtime between the towers at the World Trade Center. They would set up a stage and have an outdoor thing during the summer. They would set up a stage and have these concerts that were free. And so we were looking to see what it was. It was like a Tuesday afternoon. And we were all trying to figure out, because there was a pretty big cast and everybody's significant others and all that stuff were there. And it was a large group of people. We were all in New York. And I was sober for 15 minutes during that entire week. I was bombed for a week. Nothing closes in New York. Anyway, so we're looking through the Village Voice to see what the concert was, what it was going to be. And that Tuesday that we had off, it was Alex Chilton. And so we went. And it was beautiful summer day. The World Trade Center right in front of us, Alex Chilton on stage, and then afterwards he just walked out into the crowd and started saying hi to people. It was amazing, and it was free. It was unbelievable. It was one of the greatest memories, one of my favorite New York memories of all time. Of course, you know, it's added sentimental because of where the concert took place, you know what I mean? And it's a memory that I will always have. So
I can't tell you how many mix CDs I put I'm in Love with a Girl on. I was a champion with that. I didn't have the looks, but I had the music taste.
Yeah, I'll tell you, big star, man. Perfect pop music, man. Just this beautiful, just gorgeous stuff. MC5 not in the Hall of Fame. Devo, Chic.
Now Rogers.
New York Dolls. Warren Zevon is mentioned here as I mentioned every single time. Iron Maiden. Sonic Youth. Graham Parsons. How is Graham Parsons not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Oh, wait a minute. King Crimson isn't. We told that guy a little earlier.
Oh, no.
King Crimson is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's insane. John Coltrane, Nine Inch Nails, The Smiths. The Smiths aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Nah, they deny it anyway. They don't care.
Whitney Houston, Judas Priest, and Kraftwerk. Priest should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, 100%.
Come on, man. Rob Halford?
They made leather a thing for metalheads.
You know what's really funny? What cracks me up is that, because, historically, fans of heavy metal are not the most, they're not the most supportive of homosexual behavior and activities. And I'm being cliched. Obviously, this is just a...
Sure.
It's a stereotype. But I just... my question was, like, when some of the fans of Priest found out that Rob Halford was gay, were they surprised?
Well,
I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, even Rob Halford has said, he said that he got all the leather stuff because he used to dress like hippies.
Yeah.
And he would get it. He got the leather idea from going to S&M clubs.
Absolutely. Absolutely,
like, good
man.
For you.
I would say, how you when Rob Halford came out, people were like, "Oh my God, Rob Halford's gay!" Have you watched this band for 25 years?
Hell Bent for Leather.
He's the best. Rob Halford rules. Hall of Famers: The Squid, Weird Al Yankovic. Weird Al Yankovic
deserves it.
He deserves a wing, an entire wing. Dead Milkmen, They Might Be Giants, and don't forget Lemmy's cameo in Airheads. I was the editor of my high school newspaper. I think people are rediscovering the genius of Airheads. That's what I think is happening. All right, we got a break, and the news is up next, followed by some Craig Ferguson talk. I could always talk about that guy for hours. All right, news is up after this. It's on fire. It's been a long, long day, and you've got the Sandman at the door. But hang on, leave the TV on, and let's do it anyway. It's okay. I'm getting all misty, Tom. I miss Craig.
We all do, man.
Oh,
one of the best.
I mean, just one of the. I mean, come on now. Yeah, Craig Ferguson. Yesterday, 4 years, 5 years ago, announced that he was leaving late night. And it was not because people assumed it was because he wasn't going to get the late show. That he thought that he was upset because CBS didn't want the late show. It was just he wanted to move on, do some other stuff. If you watch the show, 312-981-7200, you want to talk a little bit about some of your favorite things about it. The late show was unlike any other late night talk show, unlike any other. There still hasn't been, and there won't be ever a show like it the way that Craig hosted it. He was just one of a kind, and he did everything he possibly could to stay away from all the cliches and trappings of a late night show. You know, my future ex-wife, the lovely Dana DiLorenzo, told me what it was like to work on the show, and you know, she played Beth, the CBS exec, who would give him notes during the show, and she said that it was all flying by the seat of your pants. Like, there was no preparation at all. And she said it was scary and it was thrilling at the same time. But just to see these guys working together. Josh Robert Thompson, who is the voice of, the voice of many, many characters on the show. But he's the main voice of Jeffrey Peterson. Jeffrey Peterson, who is the gay robot skeleton sidekick. The stuff between him and Craig that was never written, it was always improvised. I mean, there were two people in a horse costume that were like in a they had a barn set up for them. Secretariat, which was like the coolest looking horse ever. And it was just maniacally good, like so good. And I miss it. I miss it terribly, man. And I have a special. It has a special spot in my heart because I became a part of it. I actually became a part of the show. If you listened back in those days, like 5 years ago, but it started in December of the first time that I was mentioned on the show. I threw I sent an email on the tweets and emails segment. And they read it on the air, and it turned into a bit, and then it became a running gag, and then they named a character after me on the show. There was a character named Nikki D, who was named after me. So it was this insane thrill to just, in a small way, be a part of that show, be a part of what I thought was the most genius show on TV. It was different every single night. It was fresh every single night. You never knew what was going to happen. You just never knew what was going to happen. And, he, you know, when guests came out, he tore up he had the blue cards. Normally the blue cards that late show hosts have all the questions, you know, that they're going to ask. And he would tear those up, famously tear them up into little pieces and throw the scraps in the air. And it wasn't like there was nothing written on those cards. It wasn't a symbolic gesture. They had a writing staff. Like, Craig Ferguson had a writing staff. And that writing staff would write actual questions for the guests. Craig wouldn't even look at them. They were there every night. You know what I mean? They were there every single night. Craig wouldn't even look at them. He'd pick them up and tear them up to pieces. And then the next night for the next guest, or the second guest that night, once again, actual real questions were written by the writing staff, and then Craigie would rip them up and just you know, fly by the seat of the pants. And I remember one time when Ricky Gervais was on the show, he said to Craig, like halfway through the interview, he's like, hey, I can't believe this is a real show. What is this? What is this? This is the weirdest chat show I've ever been on. And then he also was quoted as Ricky Gervais was quoted as saying it was the best chat show he had ever been on. He did things a lot differently than anybody else, and it was a breath of fresh air to watch it every night. It really was. I mean, you could watch. I mean, there are late night guys that I really enjoy. Like I think Colbert is great. I think I think Seth Meyers is great. And I think Kimmel is really good too. And I'm also a big fan of Trevor Noah as well. All these late night guys, they're great. And it's, you know, and now, you know, the climate for late night TV is really based upon what's going on politically. There's just so many crazy things happening in the world right now, in the world of politics and in the world in general, that it's really sort of imperative to watch these guys now. It's the only way that I can get through sometimes. You know, the only way that I can get through in the madness is to actually, you know, get helped out by watching Colbert and watching Seth Meyers and stuff. And I don't know where Craig would fit in on that. He wasn't a very political. He didn't get very political on his show. He barely did monologues. He would just I'm done. He would, you know, and Dana told me that every night she would be standing right next to the, you know, to the monitor and watching the show. And he would barely tell one or two jokes that were written for the monologue. He'd just be like, all right, whatever. He would veer from it every night. He would improvise every single night. And there's a real unusual freshness to that that you just didn't see beforehand. And you haven't seen since. Somebody wrote a piece on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. It ends tonight. This was from December of 2014, and it said, "Here's why that's a TV tragedy." We also have some of the best Late Late Show moments that Craig Ferguson provided all of us. I missed the show. Did you watch the show?
Religiously.
Yeah.
It was huge in my house because Craig was Scottish.
He's Scottish, yeah.
And, you know, it was really fascinating to see my dad watch him on TV and feel on a certain level that a piece of home was there. Obviously, we could watch some British TV, but there were just things about Craig Ferguson's sense of humor that were uniquely British, and the way he transplanted it was so much fun. And I feel like only a British guy could come to the States and do a show that irreverent.
It's insane. It was crazy. I remember when I first started watching it, for what my ex-wife was way into it. She was on the train long before I was. And then when I started watching it, I was like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. Never. And he was brilliant. He absolutely brilliant. And there was nothing like it on TV. And yeah. It just kept getting, and some of the stuff they did, some of the weird stuff that was on that show.
They just broke the mold.
Because
as far, like, before I discovered Craig, my idea of what late night TV was Jay Leno.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy, a lot of people love Jay Leno. That's fine. But I really did not. I thought he was very stale.
Yeah. Well, and he still is stale. He was on Fallon last week, and it was embarrassing. His set was embarrassing.
And
the thing about Jay Leno is he used to be funny when he was edgy before he got the Tonight Show. He was funny
when he
was really edgy and really funny and best friends with Letterman. Like he was on Letterman's show all the time and killed. He killed. Everything changed when he got the Tonight Show. Everything changed. His edge was gone. He's, you know, the thing ultimately about Leno that I hate the most is the whole Conan thing, the whole how they handled the Conan O'Brien thing.
Yeah,
I can't even tell you how angry I was because Conan O'Brien is awesome. I love Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, he's great.
And that whole how he got screwed by NBC and by the Tonight Show and by Jay Leno is completely unfair.
I think there's literally a book on it.
Yeah, well, there's also a book about the debacle that was Letterman and Leno, and then they made a movie
out of it.
God, Kathy Bates is so good in it. She plays Leno's agent in it. But yeah, it was just unforgivable what happened. It was unforgivable, but nothing like that ever happened on Craigie's show, that's for sure. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, John. Hi, I really loved when they did the opening numbers with the lip syncing with the puppets. My favorite was Istanbul, and it's easily available on YouTube. Just look for Craig Ferguson, Istanbul, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. The whole show where they did puppets with the entire show was brilliant. Yeah, and I say, you know who he was always really good with? You know, like, there are certain guests that really that would kill on his show, particularly women. He was very good at, and very Parker Posey and him.
Oh, they
would
flirt
ridiculously, and it was lovely to watch. But Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls, always spectacular on the show, and they would go out of their way to do the puppet stuff when she was on.
Yeah. When Karen Gillan first got her gig on Doctor Who, she went on, and they're both Scottish,
right.
And it's honestly one of the cutest conversations I've ever seen.
Yeah, I miss him, man. Miss him terribly. Okay, John, thank you for the call. If you guys want to jump in, we're talking some Craig Ferguson. We're going to go back and look at some of the best moments and reasons why that show was so great. And in fact, I think we're going to play the audio from the very first email that I sent in that got read on the air. We'll do that. But I had been mentioned on that show, I want to say 15, 16 times that they had me on mentioned on the show, which was just amazing. I remember that night, Tom, when we're going to play the audio a little bit later, when that first aired, I was losing my mind. I was on the couch just losing it. I couldn't believe that it was like this show that I adored, and I was being mentioned on it, and I caused a bit. I actually forced a bit on Josh Robert Thomas. I forced him to improvise and work really hard, and we'll hear that in a little bit. But anyway, it's a sad anniversary with Craig announcing that he was leaving late night, and we'll talk about why that's such a great show and why we miss him so much. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. There's a band that's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame singing about a singer who's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
The irony.
Oh, man. That's a replacement. It's Alex Chilton, one of my favorite songs of all time. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke in a little bit because it's Monday morning. But 5 years ago, Craig Ferguson announced that he was going to leave late-night television, and that hole in late-night has never been filled. The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, one of the greatest shows that's ever been on TV. And nothing like it had ever existed before or since. The rules that he broke, the things that they did on that show, how funny and creative it was. Nothing was better. And I missed the show pretty terribly. Let's talk to Wally on WGN. Hi, Wally.
Hey, Nick. How are you doing?
All right.
Good. Good. Hey, I was actually listening. I called your producer, and I thought that maybe Craig Ferguson had died because I turned it on. I'm actually in Switzerland right now.
Oh, Switzerland, thanks.
And I turned it on, and I heard you say, "Oh God, I miss him." I thought, "Oh man, he's died."
Yeah, no, he's fine. Thankfully, he's still with us, still very much with us. I just missed the show terribly. I mean, because
he was so great. You know, the thing is, he made a point of tearing up the notes at the beginning of an interview, and just talk with people.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you had mentioned, he was flirting with someone. I don't remember who you said, but you know who he flirted with and who really I gained a great deal of respect for was Kristen Bell.
Amazing.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, she just came off as smart and witty and able to go toe-to-toe with him.
Yeah, no, they were unbelievable together. They were unbelievable together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I miss him also. He was great, and you're right. There's nobody... None of the junk we've got for late night now comes anywhere close to it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Hey, Wally, thanks for listening all the way from Switzerland. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Kristen Bell. Oh, man. Now I'm thinking about the Keep Banging on Your Drum. I cried like a baby when it was the final episode. Oh, man. I'm getting a little misty right now, and I'm not kidding.
I know.
I was crying like a baby. I was weeping during that opening. I've had Josh Robert Thompson on the show like four or five times. And obviously my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo, has been on the show several times, and we've gotten from their point of view many times of what's going on. Here's what they said. It's the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. This was written on the on the last day of that show. Speaking of Bang Your Drum, Keep Banging Your Drum, which is the opening number that they did with several celebrities, like a ton of celebrities that were that would pop up at the beginning. It was just beautiful. Here's what they say about this. This is from Vox.com. Why this is a tragedy that show left. He was the best damn interview in late night. Ferguson had his faults here and there, particularly his over-the-top horn dog routine when he broke out when attractive actresses visited. But he consistently refused to follow the script and simply promote whatever pop culture artifact a celebrity was there to promote. That made him a rare commodity in an increasingly homogenized late-night landscape where interviews feel rehearsed to death. This is especially true of Jimmy Fallon's The Tonight Show, which feels like Fallon is really trying hard not to provoke any emotion whatever from his guests. Not every guest was a great fit for Ferguson, but there were ones that he clicked with, like, say, actress Kristen Bell returned again and again because he had a way of making the stars seem just like they were not just hustlers promoting product, but actual human beings who had interests outside of their work. He was the only late-night show host who could somehow credibly turn over an entire hour of talking to Archbishop Desmond Tutu and make it riveting TV, and it was phenomenal. Colbert is a great interviewer, too, particularly when you factor in that he had to interview in character. But Ferguson was a real treasure, and it's too bad that he won't have these weird nightly riffs anymore. He was also unapologetically silly. Yeah. Yes, he was. Ferguson is Scottish, and there's a thick sense of British sketch comedy hanging over the show with its weird recurring bits and numerous running jokes. Even when he was beating one of these jokes into the ground, it was clear that he was doing it just so he could swing it back around and be funny again in a week's time. He experimented with the form. Ferguson's show took road trips to other countries that turned into impromptu travelogues. It would sometimes open with a puppet directly in front of the camera, and it would be fine doing a show during a power outage. Ferguson's unflappability made literally anything that happened on the stage he stood on seem like it was meant to happen. The late-night talk show has been in need of reinvention for decades now. Ferguson didn't quite break the mold, but he certainly pushed as hard as he could against the edges of it. It's tricky balancing, and he handled it beautifully. 630 area code says, where is Craig Ferguson now? I can't even find Celebrity Name Game anymore. I admire your admiration for Craig. Yeah, Celebrity Name Game, which, of course, I taped every day.
So good.
And he was fantastic. He won. That's how he won his Emmys, by the way.
He won his Emmys for Celebrity Name Game?
He won two Emmys for Celebrity Name Game. Well, never won an Emmy for his Late Late Show.
It was honestly one of the most fun morning things.
Oh, it was great.
Because I wouldn't have class until much later in the day.
Yeah.
So me and my roommates would get up every morning, watch Celebrity Name Game, and then The Price is Right.
Sure.
And Wayne Brady on Let's Make a Deal.
I know that it's time for me to go to sleep when I'm watching Price is Right. That's my bedtime. I'll watch the first couple of segments of Price is Right if I'm awake, just so I can see if the yodeling idiot's going to fall off the mountain, because that's my favorite game ever.
I'm Plinko. I'm here for Plinko.
Plinko's class.
Got to get in for Plinko.
Price is Right is a timeless game. I mean, it's never going to, you know, and I remember when, you know, Drew Carey took over. Everybody was like, that's it. The show's over. It's the end of the show. Because you can't do, you know, they're like, you can't do Price is Right without Bob Barker, you know? Because Bob Barker, just a legend. And Drew Carey did great. Yeah. He does great.
He's very good. Yeah. He found his footing.
Yeah. And speaking of Craig Ferguson, Drew Carey.
Yeah.
That's where Craigie got his start. Well, his start on television.
Yeah.
Oh, to answer the listener's question, Craig does stand up. He tours around and does stand up. I've seen him live like three times. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He appears here and there on TV. Yeah. And he did a show on the History Channel called Join Us or Die.
Yeah.
Where they would take one topic and he would have guests on and they would talk about that topic for the half hour. And it was terrific. He needs to be on TV regularly, more regularly. So doing something, man. I don't care. I need more Craig Ferguson in my life. All right, more reasons why he's great and some of the best moments in the Late Late Show history. We will get into that coming up, but we have to break here for the news. 312-981-7200 for talk or text for talking Craig Ferguson, remembering the Late Late Show. More of that and my dad's joke coming up in a little bit. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And, we've been talking about Craig Ferguson. If you're a longtime listener to the show, you know how obsessed I was with the Late Late Show, and that the fact that I kind of became a part of it was amazing. The show was just so unique. There was nothing else like it on TV. Mostly, you know, made up on the spur of the moment. And Craig Ferguson's show was the best. And there are reasons why we loved him so much. One of them that they wrote about is because of the monologues. I had friends who kept the Late Late Show on their DVR record list just for Ferguson's monologues, which were frequently brilliant, beautiful, and perfect pieces of comedic writing. They almost always centered on a single topic rather than turning into a series of disconnected jokes about the day's events. In their finest moments, they flew from comedic peaks to genuine moving valleys. He also wasn't afraid to open up about serious subjects. His most famous monologue. Oh, God. This one's a real personal one for me. This is when he pleads with people not to make fun of Britney Spears. You remember this monologue? And he opens about his own hard-won sobriety. And it was really serious. It was really beautiful. It was real. It moved me really deeply and inspired me to attempt to stay sober when it's not very easy to do. But I look back at that monologue a lot. It's a monologue that spoke right from his heart, and he shared incredible amounts of private moments and a heartbreaking story about how he was going to kill himself. He was in London. He was going to jump off the bridge on Christmas. And then he talks about being an alcoholic and how you have to deal with it. And what that means. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen anybody talk about on late night TV. Ferguson loved anarchy. This, in a way, is just a summation of all the above points. Yes, that's true. But in the show's finest years, roughly 2007 to 2013, it was a deeply subversive because it essentially suggested that while the usual talk show templates, they were mostly excuses to try and break the rules as much as possible. Ferguson stuck to the typical talk show script, monologue, followed by sketch, followed by first guest, followed by second guest, followed by musical guest or comedian. But at all times, there was a sense that the bottom could fall out of the show and it might become something else entirely. The adjective that might best describe the series was restless. Ferguson always seemed like he was looking for something else to talk about, some other joke to crack, some other conversation to have. The show's focus roved everywhere. The restlessness may have come ultimately from why he left the show. He claims that it was his own volition rather than because CBS wanted to clean house. And normally, I wouldn't buy that from a guy who went from a late-night talk show to hosting a syndicated game show, but that's the restless quality that showed up. But it meant a near perfect 10 years of late night TV. So, as I mentioned before, I was actually featured on the show. I wrote, what happened was the producer of the show, Michael, sent me a package. He had heard that I was talking about the show on the air very kindly. So he sent me a nice note in a package with a bunch of Late Late Show t-shirts in it. And then I had like his personal email. So I sent him an email thanking him for the nice package and thanking. I was like, I'm astonished that you actually know that I'm talking about the show. I'm assuming someone heard it and told him or something like that. And I was like, well, look, you know, since I have this email address, if I send an email to be part of the tweets and email segment, am I guaranteed to get it on? He's like, yeah, you're guaranteed to get it on. So at this point, Craig Ferguson used to, he didn't have a band. He didn't have a late night band. And he made fun of that a lot. He talked about because CBS was too cheap and all that stuff. But then they turned it into a bit because there was a big curtain on the stage. And so he made up the fact that there was a band behind that curtain. And it was Josh Robert Thompson who was doing the voice of Alfredo Sauce, who was the leader of the leader of the band, the Shy Fellas. And so this became a running gag. It was like, you know, so they would play music from a, you know, like a tape or something. They would cue the music digitally, and then they would pretend like there was a band behind the curtain. So Craig would pretend that there was a band behind the curtain. So this had been a running gag now for a few weeks. So I sent in an email for the tweets and email segment, and it got through. And this was the very first of many times that some of my emails and my name would be mentioned. And this was I was beside myself when this first aired. So this was from December of 2013.
Nick D in Chicago. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on? Hey, Greg, we met Alfredo Sauce, the band leader. Oh, yeah, the Alfredo Sauce.
Yeah, Alfredo Sauce, right, yeah.
How you doing, Alfredo?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Okay, good.
Wow.
So, Nick D says, we met Alfredo Sauce, the band leader. Who are the other members of the Shy Guys? Well, who are the other members of the Shy Guys, Alfredo?
Well, we got Terry on the bass.
Terry?
Terry, yeah, Terry.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Terry.
Hey, don't.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Hey, and who's the gentleman on drums there?
And on drums, we got the Mikey D.
How you doing, Mikey D?
Hey, I'm good. How are you? just banging away on those drums.
And who's the bass player?
So that was just one of the clips that it goes on a little bit longer, but that was in December of 2013, and I wanted to put Josh Robert Thompson through the paces, man. So he had to make up all those characters and all those voices on the spot, and then it continued. It became the members of the band there were more members in the band. Nicky D was the drummer, and. Yeah, so that was the kind of thing that you could find that was always special about Craig Ferguson's show, was just that byplay that he had, the rapport that he had with Josh Robert Thompson was just so brilliant and so funny, and the fact that it was a skeleton sidekick, robot skeleton sidekick, Secretariat, the horse that would come out and dance, you dance with Secretariat. It was just unlike anything that was ever on TV. And some of the other great moments that they talk about here, New York Post put together some of their favorite late show moments. Craig riffs with Jeff and Secretariat, his robot sidekick Jeff and Secretariat, the pantomime horse, have been a part of almost every show in the later years, frequently appearing in Ferguson's monologue or other bits. The host even mentioned his prized pals in the official statement announcing his departure from the show. Quote, CBS and I are not getting divorced. We are consciously uncoupling, but we will still spend holidays together and share custody of the fake horse and the robot skeleton, both of whom we love very much. Again, unlike anything. Some of the other really memorable moments of the show include when Craig eulogized his parents. The host paid an emotional tribute to both of his parents when they died. His father was in 2006. His father died in 2006, and it was just a beautiful monologue. The episode earned Ferguson his first Emmy nomination, and his mother almost 3 years ago when she died in 2008. And by the way, a lot of these things that we're going to be talking about, you can find online. YouTube has a bunch of great clips, from Ferguson's show. A lot of great moments have been captured that you can find on YouTube, including those eulogies of his folks, those separate eulogies of his folks. Craig becomes an American citizen. Ferguson always starts his show by saying it's a great day for America, and he became a U.S. citizen himself in 2008, documenting the swearing-in ceremony for the show. I remember that too. Yeah, it's a great day for America, and he would slam on the camera. how about this? Craig does an entire show in puppets. In addition to his sidekicks, Ferguson also frequently uses puppets on the show, including a December 2009 episode that marks his 1,000th episode, where Ravy Rancheros filled in as host. The all-puppet episode also featured a shark and Connery the Bull puppets and guest Jason Segel with a Dracula puppet. Craig interviews Desmond Tutu. Despite his wacky side, Ferguson didn't shy away from taking on more serious topics, like in 2009 when he dedicated an entire episode to an interview with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, for which he won, for which the show won a prestigious Peabody Award. Actress Kristen Bell served as Ferguson's co-host for a week of episodes in Paris in 2011. Which was also great. And Craig goes to Scotland. The show did you see those shows when they were in Scotland?
I did, yeah.
They were fantastic.
So much fun.
The show traveled to Ferguson's homeland for a week of episodes in 2012, which included a trip to his old high school. Those were great. Great moments. So, all right. Let's take a quick break. And if you guys, we have a clip that we're going to play in a little bit. Some of the really hilarious stuff that happened between Craig and Josh Robert Thompson as Jeffrey Peterson. And we've got more of that. If you guys want to jump in here with your thoughts on it and remembering how great Craig Ferguson's show was and how there's really nothing like it on TV and there never will be and there never has been before, 312-981-7200.
It's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro.
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey, what'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah. That's right. Every Monday morning at this time, my dad calls in and tells a joke. We like to get your work week off started with a laugh. So my dad, who's been telling jokes his whole life, has been telling him on the show now for quite a while. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Let us say hello to my dad. Hey, Dad.
Hey, Nick.
How you doing?
Doing good.
All right, how's Ma?
Great.
All right. You got a joke?
Yeah, the joke.
All right.
A woman says, I once gave my husband the silent treatment for an entire week, at which time her husband declared, hey, we've been getting along great lately.
All right. It's hard to believe that you and Mom have been married for as long as you have. So,
hi, Ned.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, there's my dad. He'll be back again next week.
That was jokey, jokey, jokey time. It was a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
There we go. All right, he'll do it again next week. We're talking about Craig Ferguson, and we just got a text here from Terry, who said, my ex and I would always switch the channel each night to watch the What Did We Learn from the one? What would he learn from the show tonight, Craig, with the cat? There it is. The cat would make different noises. It would do like they had that image of the cat was always what we learned on the show. So there's so many funny. I mean, again, like I said, a ton of Craig Ferguson Late Late Show clips are on YouTube, and you could go down that wormhole, and it's a great wormhole to go down because it's just, I mean, you know, one of the greatest TV shows ever, and it was just so consistently hilarious, and he was so great. And again, a lot of that is available that you can check out on YouTube. And I highly recommend, if you're not really familiar with it, get in there and start watching some of these Craig Ferguson clips. Now, one in particular that I've played before, we've played this before, but it's so funny. Craig and Jeff, Jeffrey Peterson, voiced again by Josh Robert Thompson, began a conversation and then it started out as a bar fight conversation, then Wilford Brimley was brought up. And I just think this is unbelievably hilarious. So here, this is from, maybe 2010 or something like that.
Yeah, August 30th, 2011.
Okay, here we go.
Did while I was fighting.
Hey, wait, you have to hear this. I'm sorry to interrupt a really great story, but I was in the grocery store the other day. You know who I saw at the salad bar? Winfred Brimley! At the salad bar! Winfred Brimley! Cocoon! At the salad bar! Helping himself to salad! I thought, doesn't he have diabetes?
Did he yell at you about diabetes? Like he does in those commercials? I want you to pick up the phone right now, or I'll kill you.
To go over and say, good for you, Wilfred Brimley, you're getting salad because you've got diabetes.
Hey, why the hell are you staring at me while I'm at the salad bar?
You know, the worst thing was, my wife took a photograph on her iPhone. She's like, Wilfred Brimley, she's like, Mom!
I'm a decent man, I'm trying to eat a salad here. Snapping your damn photos, I got diabetes.
Anyway, look, if you have got diabetes, salad's the way to go, I think. That's one of the...
If you have diabetes, Wilfred Brimley's gonna kick your ass.
I see, that is just a small, little teeny nugget of the kind of stuff that would happen for 60 minutes a night. And none of that, you know, none of that was scripted, obviously. They were just telling the story on the spur of the moment, and that's what made that show so special, man.
I've got tears coming
out. Oh, it's hilarious. I mean, and that's nothing. You know, like that little clip, that's just a very little teeny-weeny example of so much hilarity that would happen on that show every single night. And then they also mentioned here, we're talking about special moments where Craig passes the baton. Ferguson's successor, James Corden, stopped on the show Wednesday night to practice throwing to commercials, and the outgoing host had nothing but nice things to say about his heir. I'm delighted you're taking over, he said, while telling internet haters to leave him alone. He's lovely, and he smells like biscuits.
Honestly, I think the initial choice for James Corden was not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch the show Gavin and Stacey?
No.
So James Corden, it was an immensely popular show. In the, like, 2000s, late 2000s, early 2010s.
In Britain?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Britain. My sister, for every Christmas and birthday, she would send me DVDs from the UK because I had a region-free DVD player.
Oh, sure.
So this was how she
kept me. Little taste of home.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gavin and Stacey, hands down, one of the best dramedies I've ever watched in terms of a television show. And
was he Gavin?
No, he was like his best friend,
oh,
Smithy.
Okay.
And it's on Hulu. I implore you, give it a chance. He co-wrote it with Ruth Wilson, who's also on the show. And he plays his best bud, and he's honestly hysterical. He's hysterical. I don't know if he just went for like the social media thing too hard with the carpool, the bits, but not fun bits.
The thing about, I mean, the only time I ever watch Corden or Fallon is if they have a guest that I really like. Like if there's a it's really, because I watch Colbert, I watch Kimmel, I watch Myers, Samantha Bee,
John Oliver,
and John Oliver, man,
Johnny,
and Trevor Noah,
yeah,
John Oliver. That show to me, and it's that show to me is like on a different level. Because, when I watch John Oliver's show, the thing about John Oliver's show is that it's always, he'll do a little bits about the news. But then there's always one story that he does like 20 minutes on. And so thoroughly and so completely. And it's so funny. And not only that, I learn something every single time I watch John Oliver's show. I learned something.
He's got an incredible team behind him.
Incredible. The writing staff is unbelievable. The topics that he comes up with. I mean, he did a bit a couple of weeks ago. On the WWE, that was it was unbelievable.
Awesome.
It was unbelievable. And as a huge wrestling fan, you know, it was doubly awesome for me.
Mm-hmm.
But like whatever topic he chooses, he makes it entertaining and it's educational. And he also has a great online presence. You know what I mean? Like he does stuff, you know, with the internet that trends like crazy,
he's very, very good at that.
And he'll get hashtags going and, you know, and the whole Russell Crowe's underwear and all of that stuff.
I mean, all those stunts. My favorite thing is when he bought like school debt or no medical debt.
Medical debt.
He paid off people's medical debt.
Yeah.
As like a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the answer to Mike Pence's bunny book. When he did the gay bunny, and that thing sold. I bought a copy. I bought two copies of it. So yeah, but Oliver is on it. He's on a, you know, like a whole nother. I think he's on a whole nother level.
When you're when you're doing the weekly thing.
Did you see his interview with? He was talking about internet shaming. Did you see the interview we did with Monica Lewinsky?
Yeah,
unbelievable,
spectacular,
unbelievable. Yeah, so he's great. But there's just something about Craig was on it. You know, he would get political every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And he would get serious every once in a while. As I mentioned, he talked about his alcoholism and the death of his parents and stuff like that. And he took that stuff very seriously.
Yeah.
But his show was just supremely silly. And that's one of the things I loved about the Prince Charles stuff.
Oh, God.
I can't even... every single time he would put those ears on with the teeth, I would fall out.
We actually did get a text, a picture of the Prince Charles.
Of the Prince Charles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
from the 708.
Funny every single time. Every single time when he did it was just great. It was a great show, and nothing will be like that ever again. Mm. So anyway, 5 years ago, I can't believe it was 5 years ago that he announced that he left.
Felt like it was yesterday.
Yeah, it did. And again, tons of really, really funny stuff available on YouTube. And I'm just thrilled that I was Nikki D, the drummer for the Shy Fellas. Get to the Shy Fellas. Get to the Shy Fellas.
Alfredo sauce.
Hey, how you doing there? So funny. All right. Okay, what do we got tomorrow? What's on the Tuesday?
Tomorrow we're going to be having Brian Raftery, author of Best Movie Year Ever.
Which is about 1999.
Which I think he makes a compelling argument.
Completely. Magnolia came out in 1999. So
I think
right
there might
there.
Be a full hour on Magnolia tomorrow.
So that's, he's an author. It's a terrific book, too. Okay, that's coming up tomorrow. We're going to break here. The news is up after this. Thanks a lot, man. We'll be back tomorrow. We got two for Tuesday, and we're going to talk about the year of 1999 as one of the best movie years ever with the author of a terrific book. That's all coming up tomorrow.